Honorable members, ordinarily one would have loved to start with the internal things, so that because I know that when we engage with the quarter one, quarter two, by the end or around 12:30, 1, and then we start losing membership. But unfortunately, we cannot do so, because we then need about 6 members to be here to be able to take decisions on the business of the committee. And then we are forced to start with work that doesn't require us to take decisions. In front of us, we have got an agenda. I hope that you have got the correct agenda, honorable members, that have apologies at the end, at the top, and then adoption of the agenda. Then is the briefing that's expected out of 3 entities. Then from there is deliberations, then comes the minutes and the committee program and closure. I hope you have got, you are having that kind of a copy. And Secretary, the delegation that we had from the department led by the DG, Ubabu Tobile Namati is here, and then the Compensation Fund Commissioner Vuyo is here, and his CFO Utando is here. Then we have got Judith Kumbi, the Chief Director in UIF. She's here. Okay, make sure that you don't go home before seeing me. Yes. And then we have got Noel Sikwimu is here. And then we have got Motunya Mutiba, I hope I pronounced it correctly, is here from Productivity SA. And then Malikole Ntig, I think this one is part of us, although we don't know him 100%, but he's now part of the furniture of Parliament. I hope that our term is getting finished. I'm not sure whether it also going to affect you. Then we've got Matapelo Matavoga, is the same situation. She's here. And then from Productivity SA, then we've got CFO Sibusiso is here. And then we have got Nochikila Sunwabile is here. Okay. Ukhona mara? Can you raise his hand? Ah. So you have got other people that are not here, and let's hope that they will join us, because one would not understand why should we have a meeting and none of these people are not here. It's Nyagemba and Shinyama. I thought that these are the pimpies that are supposed to be here when we hold a meeting. And so if they are not here, I don't know how they execute their duties. So that is the delegation that's coming from the department, honorable members. And then the secretary will indicate the apologies.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to the members and the department. Chair, I received 3 apologies from Honorable America, Honorable Madisha, Honorable Tongwane. The others had confirmed that they are coming, but I don't see them. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, and I think we should welcome Honorable Muteka. She's here today, and we appreciate, and I hope that you are well now and energetic and well prepared for this last mile of us. Okay, at least one Pimpi has arrived. thanks for your arrival, Nyekemba. We appreciate that, and at least we can guarantee a flow of information. Then, honorable members, then I put the agenda in front of yourselves, as we have agreed or proposed. Honorable Van Schalkwyk.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members, and our guests. I want to formally move for the adoption of the agenda as it is, Chair.
Thank you very much. Anybody who second, Honorable Muteka, you are happy. Honorable Muteka is seconding the adoption of the agenda. Anybody that has got a problem with the agenda we had today? None. And then can we then call upon the compensation fund if they are ready, and then to proceed. Of course, we don't have all the time, but also that doesn't mean that we must not have all the issues that requires our attention and also requires your attention. And but we generally know that everything else that you have in front of you requires your attention, and you'll make the judgment. Proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I will jump straight to slide number 6, which is on page 3 of the handout. This is just a high-level overview of how the APP of the fund is structured. It's structured according to the 3 core business units of the compensation fund. So we have indicators around disability management, medical services, as well as compensation and pension benefits. So the indicators that is developed in the APP are then linked to these 3 core business areas of the compensation fund. If you go to slide 12 just shows the performance per each of the, we have 4 performance or budget programs in the compensation fund: administration, compensation, or COIT services, as well as medical services, and lastly also orthotics and rehabilitation, which is the disability management program of the fund. So we, for quarter one, we achieved 100% of the administration targets, as well as the that were due for reporting in quarter one, as well as in quarter two, those that were due for reporting in quarter two, 100% of those indicators were achieved. The in program two, we achieved 67% of the indicators that were reportable for quarter one in 2018-19, as well as those in quarter two. And the same for medical services. We had 2 performance indicators. We achieved all 2 that were reportable at the end of the 2 quarters, quarter 1 and quarter 2. So we achieved 100% of these, as well as the 1 indicator that we had both on the orthotics and rehabilitation. We had 1 target that has been achieved in both quarter 1 and quarter 2. If you go to slide 13.
I may not have heard you properly. Just go back to that slide. Maybe I was a little bit asleep. That administration, you say it's a target plan 2, then there is 1, then it's 100%.
The planned targets.
I may not have heard you properly.
Okay. The planned targets for the year are 2. The ones that were due for reporting in quarter 1 and in quarter 2 is 1. So that 1 has been achieved. The other one is a target that is reportable in quarter 4.
No, then the quarter 2 planned target should be 1. That's what you planned for the quarter.
For the 2 quarters, yes.
It should be 1. Then the 100% then makes sense. But if you write 2, then it's for the whole year, that one is not
For the four quarters.
Yes.
Noted.
So, honorable members, you see what we're giving us. Okay,
thank you, sir. And then the slide 13 is just an overview of the performance of the fund over the, I think most notably the one from at the end of quarter four, 2017-18, we were at 67% of achievement of our targets. And for quarter one and quarter two, we've maintained that momentum of increasing the performance of the fund over the reporting period. So we have now been stable at 86% in the first two quarters of the financial year. Slide 15. Slide 15 then looks at each of the performance indicators that we have in the APP. The first one, which is the risk-based audit plan, which is one of the indicators within the administration program. We in quarter one we had 25% of achievement against the target of 25%. And quarter two, we had a 60% against a target of about 45%. The percentage of approved benefits that need to be paid within a 5 working days of them being approved, we've been achieved 100% on both the quarters. With regard to percentage of active registered employers assessed annually, the target for quarter one was 40%. We were able to assess about 35% of the the employers, with a slight deviation of about 5% that we didn't get to. In quarter two, we have a target of 55% of employers assessed, and we have a 38% achievement of the employers that have been assessed by the end of quarter two. So that has been that's one indicator that has not been achieved. The claims adjudicated, I'll talk to the reasons later on, the claims adjudicated within 40 working days of receipt of the claim, we have a target of 90% of these which needs to be adjudicated within 40 days. We were able to do 92% in quarter one and 95% in quarter two. The percentage of medical invoices that need to be finalized and paid within 60 working days of receipt, we have a target of 85%. In quarter one, we achieved 99%, and in quarter two, we achieved 85%, 94% against the target of 85%. The percentage of pre-authorization requests, where people request approval for procedures that needs to be undertaken on those that are undergoing treatment, the target is to have these responded to and approved within 10 working days. 85% of these approved and responded to within a working day, 10 working days. We in quarter one we achieved 87%, and in quarter two we had 90%. The percentage of compliant requests for assistive devices responded to within 15 working days. This is where our injured beneficiaries, where they have to get approval for replacement of their devices or for them to be issued with new assistive devices. The target is 85% within 15 days, and we then achieved 91% in quarter one, and we had about 89% in quarter two. The next slide is just showing the performance indicators per province. It just shows all provinces were able to achieve the adjudication of claims within 40 working days. The next slide talks to the those that are finalized within 60 working days of receipt, the medical invoices. This also shows that all provinces have achieved the targets for both quarters. In fact, so the only members would recall that previously when we reported this, a lot of the invoices were being dealt with by the system, where if provinces had not finalized invoices by end of the day, the system would then go through, especially those that are ready for authorization, just waiting for someone to press the button. The system would then auto-approve those. But we worked on the performances of the provinces to make sure that everyone does what they need to do. That is why we're seeing a decline in the amount of medical invoices that would have been authorized and processed by the system without human intervention. That's why we're seeing a decline in the turnaround time for the system generated approvals. The next slide just talks to the pre-authorizations that are responded to within 10 working days. Two provinces that did not achieve this target is the Eastern Cape with 80% as well as the Northwest with 75% against the target of 85%. So there are some, there is some work that we've done with the two provinces to make sure that we help and provide support from head office within our medical services unit to give support for the provinces, and as a result, I think in subsequent quarters we have been able to achieve this particular target. And 80% and 75% was an improvement from the previous quarter one performance. The next slide is on the approval for assistive devices that have to be responded to within 15 working days. The three provinces, four provinces that had not been able to achieve this target was the Eastern Cape, was the Northwest, the Northern Cape, as well as the Western Cape. So now we've also assisted with providing some of the resources within head office to be able to help the province and provide support to the provinces to be able to attend to the requests on time. In fact, we've had the some of the resources from the Northern Cape that have been able to help assist in other provinces, and that could be one of the reasons why, for example, even some of their own things were falling behind, because we have a disability managers and medical doctors in the Northern Cape that are then used to assist in the Western Cape as well as the Eastern Cape, because we had not appointed people in those provinces at the end of quarter two. The slides, last slide that I will talk to is just where we link performance to the budget. With regard to program one, the we had used about 23% of the budget that we had set for administration against the expired period of about 50% of the time, because this is the budget is the annual budget that we've set for the year, and at the end of quarter two we had spent about 23% of this budget that we had allocated for the year. One of the reasons for the for this is, one is the savings that we've generated from some of the projects that we've done in-house, as well as the fact that we're still in the process. We had actually budgeted for expanding the capacity within the occupational health and safety inspections. So that process is still underway to get the inspections capacitated, so that then we can be able to help fund some of the proactive work with regard to preventing the workplace injuries and diseases. On COIT services, we have used about 14% of the budget. I'll touch both COIT services and medical benefits, where we've used about 14% and 45% of the budget respectively. At the end of quarter two, we actually, when we were preparing the budget for 2019-20, we have reviewed the way that we budget for our benefits, particularly the pensions as well as the claims. Previously, because the fund had major backlogs, we used to budget even for the provision for outstanding claims. And the provision for outstanding claims was always high because of the backlogs. The fact that we're now dealing with a lot of the claims, as evidenced by the turnaround time that we showed with regard to adjudication of claims, we have had to reduce our provision, the budget for provision for outstanding claims that we need to provide for at the end of the financial year. So we have then subsequently reduced the budget. When we report for quarter three, we'll see that the variance is going to be much less. Another anomaly was the fact that when we approve pensions for beneficiaries, from an accounting point of view, we're required to then capitalize the future payouts of pensions. So any pensions that we then pay out after that, we pay it out of the capitalized portion. We don't pay it necessarily out of the current year's budget, but we had been budgeting for it as if we're paying for it out of the budget. So we've actually now cleaned up the budget to make sure that we only budget for the portion that we're going to transfer to the capitalized pensions and not budget for it as if we're paying for it out of the current year's budget. With medical benefits, we are about 45%. This is the 50% mark that we're supposed to be in at the end of quarter two, which is just a slight deviation. With regards to orthotics and rehabilitation services, this is a new unit that we set up within the fund. What we had budgeted for only here was the administrative resources that they require to be able to set themselves up, start working on programs and policies that we need to implement. And because it's a unit that was spun out of the medical benefits team, we only had the chief director appointed, and we've now been appointing a lot of the support staff within the chief directorate. That's why at the end of quarter two, the budget wasn't really utilized as much. That's the last slide, Chair. I just want to, I think on slide, with regards to the non-achievement of the active employers that needs to be assessed, we had a target of about 45%. I think the major issue there remains the issue of non-compliance by employers. That is why we are partnering with the inspections and enforcement to make sure that we start proactively auditing employers to make sure that all employers that are registered with the compensation fund are submitting their return of earnings and they are being assessed correctly according to the numbers of workers that they have in their payrolls. IES has now appointed all payroll inspectors that are supposed to exclusively focus on enforcing compensation fund legislation. They've been undergoing training in the last month, so we should start seeing in the new financial year some improvement with regard to compliance to COIDA legislation, because at least now we've got dedicated inspectors that are going to enforce COIDA legislation. Thank you very much, Chair.
Is that only 38?
Only 38% of the employers that have been actively assessed, that have been assessed for...
No, the dedicated inspectors.
No, it's 99.
The whole country.
The whole country, for COIDA, just for COIDA specifically. But we're working with IES as well on the occupational health and safety. We're actually trying to increase that capacity to close to about 500 OSH inspectors that would then help us also work on the... in some aspects of preventing workplace injuries as well as investigations that are required in terms of the COIDA legislation.
We'll hear the DG and the members. 99 the whole country, inspectors. And 99 is just maybe similar to the traffic officers of Rustenburg. Only. Only, yeah. We'll hear from the DG and the members. Honorable members, I think that is the presentation that has been made. And we shouldn't we allocate some 25 minutes and interact with this so that we don't get lost in the presentations? I'm just asking for direction. We should do it that way. Whether it's, I would love the DG to make an input after members have engaged with this, so that then if there are also other issues that members are raising, that requires the DG, and then he should be able to comprehensively respond to them. There we are, honourable members. Slide number 21 needs you to talk to. And then and a couple of slides, 17, 16, also, and slide 14, 2.2, has got mixed fortunes. Welcome, Behram. Yes, thanks for your participation yesterday. Honorable Teko. Honorable Bakhra will follow.
Thanks, Chair. I was a little bit confused on... We welcome the report as presented to us. Mm. The chart where it was showing 100% 2:1, I think you have raised that question, so that maybe Commissioner explain to us what is happening. The intervention by the head office to the two provinces, being Eastern Cape and the other one, what is that one? Northwest. I think there is an improvement as they are presenting to us. So I wanted to check on the top 20 injuries that is happening around the country, be it the shops that are top companies, which is five, which you have listed on page 38.
with even ShopRite, Pick and Pay, the likes. Is there intervention where we can improve and minimize the injuries that are happening on these shops, because the stats say top five, I don't know. Can you explain to me whether it's very bad or now it's getting down, or there is an improved, or there is an intervention, or the department must be full-time on those companies to for the intervention? Because I can see when you intervene as a head office, the improvement is there. The two provinces have indicated that when you are on board as the head office, then there is something that is happening on the ground. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Bakram.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the Commissioner. I do want to record that whenever I have written to the Commissioner in the last 6 months, I've had instant response and a very good and satisfactory response, and I thank him personally for that, because I still get continual complaints. There are a couple of things I do want to raise which are problematic. And you hit the nail on the head, Mr. Chair, with the comment about the 99 inspectors. At least it's 99. I actually thought we had none. So I'm at least pleased with that, that we almost hit 100 inspectors. We've got about, I don't know how many, have we got a million businesses in the country? So it's never going to touch sides. And I have a problem in that every time I report to the fund that an employee who's been injured has found out that he was never registered with the Department of Labor. And then I get bogged down in the system because I can't lodge a claim because he wasn't registered. And then I somehow don't get anywhere. And I keep getting bogged down in that. And maybe these 99 inspectors could be targeting those sort of complaints, because that you hit gold immediately. You know that business hasn't been registered because someone's reported to you that they've not been registered. And some of these businesses are medium-sized businesses, not like it's a small three-man show in the middle of nowhere. These are big businesses with 40, 50 people. And maybe those inspectors could be targeting that in itself, and maybe there's a comment on that. I just don't think 99 inspectors can be... I don't even know what sort of facilities they've been given. 4x4 vehicles, or what are they? What have they got? Maybe you can tell us. And then I do want to outline a small case. I went to go and do an oversight in Port Elizabeth. In fact, a fellow who had been injured 23 years ago, and the Commissioner knows about the case. I've written to him on numerous occasions about it. The system is like walking through treacle. It's so difficult to actually get a claim for someone who doesn't have advice, for someone who gets bogged down. This fellow happens to be almost blind, so he can't even see the paperwork. It's become impossible. So even now, 23 years later, he still hasn't had the majority of his medical costs paid for. And the advice to him when we arrived in Port Elizabeth, because I went into the hearing with him in Port Elizabeth, was that he must lodge different appeals and complaints and whatever. It's almost impossible without the help of an attorney. It's just very difficult. And I'm not sure if Port Elizabeth is indicative of the whole system throughout the country, but to my mind it looks like it is, because there are people who are getting bogged down. I know new cases are coming in and the Commissioner is sorting them, because at least he gets on top of them quickly. I'm talking about that old background of cases. I don't have any comments on the numbers and the targets that the Commissioner has presented today. I can't argue with it, so I thank him for the report. Thank you.
No, sir. Thank you very much. Honourable Mteka.
Thank you, Jefferson. My question is one, man. How do you manage the country with 99 inspectors? Not just a country, I mean, not just province, the country. with so many factories, so many workplaces and all that, is somehow, I think we are not doing justice to that DG. One is battling to check how do you cope with that, and also as already indicated by other speakers, the mistake on page 7 must be fixed, because you cannot have 100% out of one out of two. So that must be corrected. Thanks very much.
Honorable Mutambi.
Thank you, sir. Mine is on slide 21, page 11. Though the variances are explained, I want to deal actually with the variances there. Then I'm trying to locate it in lines with what is explained on slide 26 up to 28. But then I'm trying to link it with this, what is here on the, especially program 2 and program 4. I'm trying to get it and also to link it with the remedial action to say, because this is an issue of concern to say, then, and budget is allocated, then your inability to spend. Maybe if they are thoroughly explained, these variances, because I don't see them on base what is explained on those slides that I've indicated. That gives me a problem to say, then I think these variances are huge. Then maybe a column that will also have to deal with the remedial actions. That will assist. Chairman, the other issue that I always ask now, where we are seated as we are doing oversight, already quarter 3 has passed and gone by commissioner through DG, and then to be get assurance to say how does it look like, because we are almost now at the last quarter of financial year, mindful of the fact that maybe our other payments are dependent on other people, but these are the monies that we have allocated that has to be spent within a particular fiscal framework. That's my issue, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I think what then becomes a little bit important is what are the core business of the compensation fund. And that core business, how is it resourced in terms of financial resources and human resources? And one thing that strikes me is that when you speak about 99 inspectors, probably you're having about 50 to 60 that are operational on the ground. Others may be doing administrative work, reporting their inspections, putting them on piece of papers, and not necessarily doing the inspections on the ground. Not all of them will be on the ground at all, because they've got administrative work to do. But let alone, I think this should be informed by the core business of the compensation fund. And that we just want assurance that we are not undermining the core business. And then the other thing is that you have got those medical invoices which you say that they get approved by the system itself if no human intervention was made in time. I would just like to hear how quality assurance is done on those ones. Because surely if those can be approved by the system without human intervention, that means all of them then can be sorted out by the system. And then we may need to redeploy the current human resources that are there. But if the human resources necessary, the human intervention is necessary, then what is there that will be missing when the systems do it on behalf of you, your human resources? I'm worried about that. Actually, I'm just trying to check with the quality assurance that the human intervention brings in the system. Then the other one, of course, is your slide 21. If I've heard your explanation, is that some of the funds that have been utilized here are funds that you have generated somewhere else outside the budget. Is that correct? If that is correct, is that how do you then monitor the spending of such funds if they are hidden somewhere else? Because what you have on the budget, the spending on the budget is the one that we utilize to follow your delivery of services. Now the budget, then it is separate and then it is not used. Then we are using some slush funds somewhere else, which we are not following. There's nowhere to follow it. And then you only see the numbers this side that you are performing, but we don't see the money following or informing the performance. And then it becomes a little bit of a problem. We should have had maybe some line that talks to that slush fund. And then we see the financial flows in that particular slush fund, and then informing the funding of your 100% performance on your programs. Otherwise, we can't follow anything. So if we take for granted that these numbers, 100%, they are just out of the mind, because we don't see what informs them. 14%, I mean, is in two quarters. Very problematic. Somewhere else we have got just hardly 2%, but you said this is only the chief director. But the chief director, after being appointed, then he should have done something, put systems in place, and then there would have been spending of the infrastructure required to run that particular directorate. But it doesn't look like, because I'm not sure the 54,000, whether it is just simply reimbursements of whatever, but infrastructure spending on the systems required to assist the chief director in that directorate to do the work. And then we need to see how much it has been spent to actually facilitate that. DG, let's hear from Skalberg. Yes. And Fuerten, my friend.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I want to echo the comments by the previous members, but also I want to welcome the presentation that has been made. And I want to make a special mention, Chairperson, that we've come a long way with this entity, and there's been various interventions and there's been various action plans, and I think we need to give credit where credit is due. When we look at the overall performance, we see that there's an overall improvement in terms of the performance, and even in terms of the performance of the provinces. But also, Chairperson, I think we need to give credit to the entity to in terms of the action plans that we finally see yielding positive results faster. So we want to commend the department and the entity in terms of that one. But Chairperson, when we look at the expenditure in terms of the compensation of employees, we see that 46%, which you are saying it's a normal spending. Can you quantify that vacancy rate in terms of the actual numbers of vacancies that you are having? And also, if there is areas, like you indicated, there's a shortage in some provinces, like your Western Cape, which you have to use people from the Northern Cape to assist there, what is the reasons that you can perhaps give? Why are you struggling to fill those positions? Then, Chair, when we look at one of the slides, you are talking about your caseware license that hasn't been finalized. Can you give us an indication of by when it will be finalized? then we know we had a problem in terms of legacy medical invoices that hasn't been paid, dating far back as the 70s and 80s. Can you give us an update on what is the current state of affairs? If you don't have the information at hand, we would welcome it if you can send it via the secretary to us after the meeting. Then, Chair, when we look at slide 38, we see the top five companies in terms of injuries. And what is of concern to me is we have the repeat offenders those in the retail sector, but we also see now a new player, or maybe not so new. It is the Western Cape Department of Health, and that is a point of concern because it's a government department. Do you have information on what exactly happened there? Is it a continuous trend, or is it a new emergence? And what led to that? And if you have made interventions in terms of dealing or contacting the National Department of Health to ensure that situation is being remedied, I thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, and then I think also last week I experienced that one lift in Parliament also locked somebody in, and it looks like it is continuous in Parliament that the lifts are locking people in and raise their blood pressures and all everything else. Okay, DG, any comment? Then the commissioner then can respond.
Chair, thank you very much. I would like to comment on the 99 inspectors. Chair, I think that the number may look very small, but the honourable members must remember that we're moving now into an era of technology. We're going to sit with a situation where if we continue to appoint more people, we're going to have people that are redundant in the system. The 99 is just the first batch of inspectors that we're appointing. So as we move into this era of automation and digitalization, you will require an integration of systems where if you register a company at Cipro, that company has got to make sure that our Cipro system has got to interface with the compensation fund system so that immediately you know that company X has been registered on the system. And it's an obligation in terms of the compensation fund registration is also going to be honored because you'll have it on the system. Currently, companies register at Cipro. There's no linkages with any of our systems. And that is why you find that companies, when they declare, they will declare differently. So they will go to UIF and declare differently that they have X number of employees. Because they know that when you declare the compensation fund, and it's a risk-based kind of a declaration that you need to make, or assessment that the assessment will be risk-based, they will then indicate that they will expose a limited number of employees. So that's why you have this, because systems are not talking to one another. So we're now busy with the integration of systems in the department so that the employers that you have on the UIF database, which is a much more comprehensive database than any of the databases that we have, the compensation fund will have access to that so that there's no need for compensation fund to to create, what we call to create new employers or business partners on the system, so they will have access to that system. So you'll have the situation that we envisage is that you'll have inspectors will sit in their offices, especially these payroll auditors, and have access to employers' payroll while sitting in their offices and interact with employers online. So where you need physical, you need inspectors to go physically to employers' workplaces, it's in a situation where you want to go and do an inspection in terms of occupational health and safety. So the commissioner here spoke about an additional 500 inspectors that we will be, adding into our system to make sure that our inspectors are able to go and inspect these companies that are. And in my work, if you hear something like this, you must be concerned. Okay. So even though the number may appear small, Chair, that's the point I wanted to raise. I think that we will be able to use the system, the technology, to make sure that we get access to the employers. What is important is that we've now begun to integrate the work that Compensation Fund is doing and the inspectorate. So the work of the inspectorate is now informed by the work, by the reports that Compensation Fund is generating. For instance, there was a question on the top 20 injuries. It's important that this information informs the planning of the work of the inspectorate. Otherwise, this becomes just information that is generated there with no specific purpose, which is linked to the work that we do. So I wanted to respond on that, and I think the other questions the commissioner will attend to them, Chair.
Do you think we have got good employers?
Chair, we do have good employers. Otherwise, the fund will not be generating the kind of income or revenue that it is generating, because most of what the work that they do, especially the administrative budget, comes from the revenue that has been generated through contribution by the employers. Yes. So you have good employers, you equally have bad employers.
Because I got some gossip information that already about the national minimum wage, and then there are more than thousands of complaints that have already been lodged for non-compliance. So that on its own, and then it indicates to me that you have got employers that need to be pushed for them to comply. And I just hope that it is minority. Because if it is not minority, in all fairness, and then they will demand more inspectorates to stick on their necks. But we'll see as we move forward.
Just on that, we're also adding another 200 inspectors into the system to specifically look at the enforcement of the national minimum wage.
Okay. Proceed, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. Just picking up from the point that the DG raised about the interaction between the work of the Compensation Fund and the Inspectorate.
Mm.
In fact, we already started seeing the question was raised on the what do we do with the top five companies and the top five injuries. Already now, the OHS Inspectorate is already working with the retail companies, ShopRite and so on, to try and help improve the occupational health and safety measures. Because a lot of the injuries that are there, the top five employers are linked to the top five injuries, which are superficial injuries, cuts, and so on, and all those other things, which may be a reflection of some or other improvements that are required in the way that they do their work. So there has been some interaction between the department as well as the retail companies with the occupational health specialists to be able to get to the bottom of these injuries and reduce them. The Port Elizabeth question, I think the one is PE is one of the bigger processing offices that we've realized in the past that we get a whole lot more claims out of the Port Elizabeth office in the Eastern Cape, comparable to what we would get in Gauteng and in the Western Cape and so on. So we are now working with the Port Elizabeth office to try and make sure that we help them with the necessary capacity that they need, because they are flooded with a large number of claims, both the compensation claims as well as the medical claims that are submitted by employers there. So we are trying to make sure that they are, in fact we are reviewing now the provincial structures, because when we initially decentralized to provinces, we actually decentralized the total of only about 500 staff members that are in the provinces. Now that's a small number when you compare it to the number of people, for example, that the UIF has in provinces and others. So with the alignment of the provincial structure to the head office structure, we actually will be creating more capacity in the provinces where we've seen that we've actually under-provided in terms of the human resources required to process claims. Eastern Cape and KZN is one of those two provinces where there is some need for additional capacity to deal with the issues. Now, the complexities around the claims process, especially with regard to the old claims, that still remains a problem, because a lot of the old claims that remain unattended to is as a result of one or two maybe documents that are not in the system, that maybe were never provided by the employer. As a result, that's why the claim was never submitted. Right. In some cases, it might have been submitted, but if we remember that in the olden days, the compensation fund work was 100% manual. So employers had to submit papers and papers that had to be sent to Pretoria for those claims to be adjudicated and assessed. With the introduction of an electronic system, that has done away with that, but it has created a whole lot of problems, because some documents could have gotten lost when they are being transported from wherever province where they were from to head office. So one of the things that we are doing now is we will be publishing a notice at the end of this month on the Gazette and in the newspapers, where we're giving everyone else, employers, employees and medical service providers, if they have any outstanding claims with the compensation fund, we're actually giving them a window period to be able to submit if there's any outstanding medical reports, so that we can close off on those claims. So we're going to give it a period of 3 months for this process. And then at the end of June, we will then, if we have not received any information on any of those claims, we'll then consider those claims finalized, and we will not be dealing with them up until such time that the person comes up. So we'll actually repudiate a lot of the claims if we have not received the information, because we've kept this information open now for too long. And in some of the cases, we don't get any of the information that we need. So we are hoping that would help. And this will be the third time we do this exercise. The first two, we didn't really get much success. We actually even created a please call me facility for them to be able to then, if they don't have resources to be able to call in or to submit whatever they need to, they can just send a please call, and then we can respond to them and be able to help them to get the information done. So we're doing now the final, so that we can then close off on those claims. And if the claim comes up again, it would then have to be submitted as a new claim. Then we would then condone the prescription period that would have lapsed with regard to that particular claim. I think the DG has already touched on the issue of the inspectors. I just want to touch also on the issue of the budget that has been raised, and what is the remedial action for the variances that we have. I indicated that I think our budgeting was wrong, both for benefits, mainly due to those reasons that I provided, that we budgeted for. So what we did, we didn't create a slush fund. So every time you approve a claim, if you approve a permanent disability claim, it means that that person, especially if the disability is 31% and above, that person qualifies for a pension for life. So what we're required to do from an accounting point of view is that we then need to take, once we've calculated how much is payable to the person, we need to do an actuarial calculation of what is the pension that is going to be payable to this person from the date of the first pension up until the time that it's estimated that this person will not live anymore. So that amount, we then need to, once it's been calculated, we take that amount and we put it in the balance sheet. That's what they call the capitalized values of pensions. That's an accounting requirement for pensions. So now every month when you pay this pension, you're going to pay it out of the balance sheet. So you're not going to see it because the figures that we show here is the figures that are coming out of our expenditure budget as well as our revenue budget, not necessarily on the balance sheet. So we then knock it off against the balance sheet. So what should be reflecting only here is that portion that we've transferred from the current year's portion that we then transferred to the balance sheet, as well as if there's a permanent disability, a lump sum payout that we're going to make. That's the portion that we pay, which is the smallest of all the benefits that we pay, those lump sums that we pay. But then the budget always, the way that we budget is always was as if that we're paying this out of the regular. So that's what we corrected. For example, I'm looking now at the quarter three report. We've actually, when we had done the revision of the budget, we've actually been able to revise the budget for COIT services because of the correction of the budgeting process. We've actually reduced the budget from like 5 billion that we had budgeted for it there to about one billion rand just to cater for those permanent disability, because the other money gets paid out of the balance sheet. And it's the same thing for outstanding claims. So at the end of the financial year, the actuaries do a provision where they look at the claims that have been reported in the system that have not been finalized, or claims where they do an estimation based on the information that is submitted by employers. They will then look at claims that have been incurred but you haven't done any work on it, because the employer still has to submit maybe the first medical report to enable us to be able to adjudicate on the claim. So they use that data then to work out how much is the possible value of these claims. So we are then required to also take these claims and treat them as if it's claims that were paid for that particular year. So you'll see them in the income statement for that financial year, but then that portion we also transfer to the balance sheet. So every time we pay claims that relate to the prior year, we pay them out of the balance sheet, not necessarily out of the current year's budget. So so the slush fund is the balance sheet. So what we will do is, because we've already done it now in the quarter three report, we will also, when we show the expenditure and revenue, we'll then also show the movement on the reserves, because that's what we pay out of. The budget, for example, on medical services, on slide 21, we had showed a major variance, for example, there. It's about 45%. At the end of quarter three, we had actually spent about 65% of the budget that we had spent set for medical benefits. If we look at the orthotic and rehabilitation, I indicated that this was a new unit that we were setting up, and it had only a budget of about 2.4 million. Because now we've appointed the head of the unit and they've already started recruiting and they've already started working on some programs. When we did the revision of the budget now in October, we've actually increased their budget from the 2.4 million to about 68 million. And there has been some work that has already been done, because we've spent about 38% of this 68 million on the work that has been done with regard to rehabilitation. So there is some movement with regard to this. The total budget spend at the end of quarter three was about 60% compared to the 32% that is here. So we were more or less in line with how we should be spending the budget. The rehabilitation unit. So the rehabilitation unit, as I said, they focus on three forms of rehabilitation. It's the clinical rehabilitation, which is what the fund has always been doing, where if an injured worker has to go for rehabilitation to be able to get back into employment or to be able to assist the person to at least live some normal life. That's what we've always been funding, but we have not been proactive in making sure that everyone who gets injured goes through that rehabilitation process, because some of them, after the rehabilitation process, they may be able to get back into employment. And then also we do vocational rehabilitation now, because some people can get injured in the workplace and then that person might not be able to go back and do the work that he was doing before. But with some kind of reskilling and retraining, that person can still be able to go work in another environment and contribute to the economy. So that's why we are now introducing vocational rehabilitation programs to be able to help the injured beneficiaries. The last form of rehabilitation is also social rehabilitation, helping to reintegrate the person back to the community. Not necessarily saying once the person is in a wheelchair or is in prosthetic legs or so on, we then help, how do we help that person to be able to reintegrate back into community, and how do we then take care of those? We have got about 24,000 pensioners on the compensation fund database. Some of those pensioners are on assistive devices. Some of them cannot even be able to take care of themselves. So we're now looking at ways that we can introduce programs. In fact, we, in our structure, we've created even a provision for social workers that would then be able to work with the disabled beneficiaries to help them integrate back within the community. So that's what that unit is responsible for. The medical invoices that are approved by the system. So now what happens is that when the invoice gets submitted by the medical service provider, so it gets switched, it goes through a process of validation, checking whether the invoice is correct. So there's some work that the system does to check the validity of the claim. Is there a claim against this invoice? Is the claim number used correct? Is the what is being claimed for aligned to what is in the injured? What is the injured? And then post, once that it's been verified, then the invoice goes into the system. But then once it's in the system, it requires human intervention to be able to validate and authorize the invoice for payment. So validating is when the claims processor would then look at the invoice and check whether is it a correct invoice, does it need to be paid, are the line items quoted for in line with the COIDA tariffs. And once that has been done, the claims processor would then validate it. But to separate responsibility, the person who validates the invoice is not the same person that must authorize it now for payment. It's a segregation of responsibility. So what used to happen in the past is that an invoice would be validated, and now it's ready for authorization for it to be paid. But then some of them would then lie in the system for a long time without them being authorized because the authorizers would be busy with something else. So now we sit with a client that is not paid because the invoice is still requiring authorization. So that's when we introduced AutoPay. So now the AutoPay, which is the system-generated payment approver, it would then sweep through the system at the end of the day and check what are all those invoices that have been validated but require authorization for payment, and then we then pay those. So that's why in the past we had a large number of those invoices that would then have been validated but not paid, and they would then be also auto-paid by the system. But because we still want supervisors to be able to work through the invoices and authorize them for payment, we've worked with provinces to make sure that they do what they're supposed to do so that we don't have a lot of invoices remaining unattended to. That is why we see a reduction in the number of invoices that have now been auto-paid, because we have more people now working on these claims and making sure that these are approved. I've touched on the number of on the issue of the budget. Quantifying the number of posts, we implemented a new structure at the beginning of this financial year, where we were increasing the number of posts that we have, particularly within the three core business areas: medical benefits, COIT services, as well as rehabilitation. So we have been now in the process of, when we implemented the structure, I think we increased our capacity by more than 40%. So we've now been able to fill a large number of these, because at the beginning of the period, we had a vacancy rate of around 40% because we created additional new positions. We're now sitting at just under 18% of the vacancies that we have now as part of implementing that new structure. Now, the challenges that we face in employing both at head office as well as in the provincial offices is the fact that, for example, for medical benefits and rehabilitation, we are appointing professionals, disability managers, which are occupational therapists. We're appointing medical doctors, occupational health nurses that are supposed to work. And now here we're competing for the same resources with the Department of Health. We're competing with the private healthcare institutions as well as the private medical aid. So it proves a bit difficult to get a lot of these posts filled. For example, we've just appointed now a doctor in the Western Cape, and it's a process that has taken us almost 2 years just to get a doctor appointed. We've just appointed an occupational therapist in the Western Cape who's a disability manager. We appointed that at the beginning of towards the middle of last year, also a post that took us a long time to fill. The doctor in the Eastern Cape, for example, is only starting on the 1st of April. Also, it's a process that has taken us some time to fill. We've now appointed everyone else, but we've lost another doctor now in Limpopo. So it means we have to start another process again to recruit for these specialized skills. The rehabilitation unit at head office, for example, we found now we had a lot of, in medical services and rehabilitation, we also require the same expertise. But at least now at head office, we've been able to appoint all the resources that we need within these two specialized units. So where provinces have capacity constraints, where, for example, like Limpopo that is using a doctor, would then be able to assign someone from head office to be able to assist in Limpopo up until such time that we get someone employed there. The current state of affairs with regards to medical invoices from prior years, I think, as I said, we're going to open up a window now for everyone else to submit whatever is outstanding that was never paid for by the compensation fund. Flowing from that, we will then close off the claims. And if a person still has a legitimate claim, that person will then have to come back and submit it as a new claim so that we can look at it from there. The issue of the Department of Health, the OHS inspectors would work with the Department of Health as well, in the same way that they would work with the ShopRite and Pick n Pay to look at what is it that causes the superficial injuries that occur in the department, and then they can assist their occupational health and safety practitioner to make sure that they implement measures that would prevent this from recurring going forward. I'll let the CFO just respond to the question on caseware, in terms of how far we are, because that's the system that we use at year end, and we are approaching year end, so there are some plans to get the license sorted out.
Good morning, Chairperson and member. The issue around caseware, the licenses were paid, so there were some interventions that were put in place, and as a result, we were also able to prepare interim financial statements at the end of November, which we presented to the audit committee in December. So that matter has been resolved. Thank you.
Nice. Thanks for the responses. I think we must come off this particular presentation. We just need to remember that we still have other two entities. We shouldn't forget that. Otherwise, we're going to find ourselves rushing at the end when we're dealing with the remaining two. Honorable Van Schalkwyk, Muteka, and Behram, in that order. 1 minute each.
Thank you, Chairperson. The reason, Chair, that I want to do a follow-up is we must remember that we are dealing with issues that but relevant to vulnerable people here. And I think we identify the challenges throughout during the past 5 years or 4 years, we need to follow up to go out to our people to say, these were the challenges that you identified, and this is the measures that were put in place, and it's yielding results. That's why we need to follow it up. The thing where I want to go into, Chair, is an update in terms of the chronic medication distribution. I can't find anything in the presentation. Can we quickly have something on that, as well as the rehabilitation centers that you envisage to open or establish to ensure that you have in-house rehabilitation for those people who need rehabilitation? Thank you, Chair.
Next.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think some response raised some questions again. Because the DG was talking about the future focus that we're going to have automation, technology, and all that. The question was about how are they managing now, or how have they been managing with so less number of inspectors, and the other thing, which I think is very critical, is about these top bad companies that are injuring our people. I think it was supposed to be attended urgently. we were supposed to get the briefing now on the visit to these top five companies. How is the feedback? What caused these injuries and all that? I'm saying this because one of these companies is Workforce Group. This Workforce Group is not only the injuries, it's also other things. We are sitting with complaints from the workers, and it's in the Western Cape. So we can have two entities in the Western Cape that is injuring our people and do all those things. So we need answers. I think the department was supposed to be ready now, briefing us on what happened during the visit. Because it's urgent thing. Injuries are urgent things. We can't postpone it for the future. And the other thing, why does it take long, 2 years, to recruit and appoint doctors? We need explanation like that.
Vikram?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A simple question, and I've asked this before. Why don't we interact with the receiver revenue and their inspectors? Because the reality is that many businesses aren't registered for income tax, but the UIF picks them up quite quickly. And if we could interact, and the inspectorate actually could be the same inspector for everyone, for UIF, workman's compensation, receiver revenue, we could actually have the same inspector go in because of the technology is available. So those 99 inspectors could be employed by the receiver revenue for all that matter. The only ones that need the skills really are the ones that are checking for whether the factory is safe. Those are the only ones that actually need the skill. The rest can have a laptop computer with them, and we can bring everyone into the net. I keep coming across businesses that when I find out they're not registered for workman's compensation, well, they certainly never registered for UIF, and they certainly don't pay any income tax. And we pick them up all the time. My first port of call is to report them to workman's compensation, obviously, because that's the initial problem, where the employees come to me and said, I'm not getting paid because I'm not registered. Then you find a whole lot of other ills that exist, and you could then fit in to that. There must be a way in which we could get more people into the net. We're going to hear this afternoon how we haven't got enough money. And why haven't we got enough money? It's because we haven't got people in the net. And I think that's part of the problem. I would be so bold as to say, and I'm openly stating it, about one-third of our business community, mostly small business, aren't registered for anything. And you are at the coalface because you get people coming in and saying, I've now fallen off a ladder, I need some help. And that becomes an inspector for you. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Chair. The issue of the turnaround on filling vacancies is raised by Honorable Mdeka and Honorable von Skalkwyk. Simple thing, Chair, do we have an effective HR planning tool like what others will do? Because this issue of 2 years to replace a doctor, really, it doesn't make sense. Chair, I raised those issues on slide 21. Mindful of the fact that we went through the annual reports of the compensation fund, and there were issues that were raised by the AG. Were there other entities, including the department that have appeared before us? There was a report, progress report on implementing the audit action plan, the stuff that we don't see here. Then I'm worried the way I'm seated here to say, then are we sure all the issues is raised by the AG are being implemented? What kind of assurance are we also having seated here? That's why, and I was emphasizing on the issue for the reasons of the variances, because that will have also to deal with the issues as raised by the AG. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. From my side, I think you don't need to respond now. You just simply carry them home. The old invoices or claims that you're speaking about, you want to create a window. But what matters more to me is where you've got a claim and what is missing. It's from the employer. So what? Do we punish the claimant? because there is some employer that gone rogue and then misplaced papers, or just simply did not fill the correct paper that is required to submit the claim. Are we saying that we open a window, people bring in the claim, and then there is a determination that is made whether one piece of paper is missing or not missing? Then a determination, a judgment, or a ruling or is made on the claim. Because surely it won't help for anybody to bring in papers, and then we still question a missing paper that has been missing for the past 50 years. I mean, you'll just wait for forever. It won't make the difference. Where there is something that is missing, we expect that somebody that is sitting with a claim would make a judgment and close the case. And the question, of course, is that which kind of paper is missing? If it's the paper from the claimant, it's another matter. Mara, if it is a paper from a third party whom the claimant has got no control over, then it's a different matter as well. So that's what I just want you to think about when you open that window. What is what you want to achieve? Because just opening it for a normal system that has already proven to have failed, it doesn't assist us. It won't assist you. You need to open, having put in mechanism to actually assist you to get rid of this particular problem or deal with it and finalize it. And then the next one, I think, is you have explained these systems generated approvals, but you still did not respond to my question. My question still remains, where the invoices or whatever the claims are approved by the system, because no human intervention came in, how do we then fill in that lack of human intervention? Ordinarily, you have got the system that approve, validate, blah, 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 but you still need a human intervention that approves or sign or do whatever. Now you've got a batch of claims or invoices where the system just simply sweep them overnight because no human intervention came in. But how do we compensate the lack of that human intervention in terms of quality control? I hope I'm making myself clear. When the system incorporates human intervention, there is a quality control that is being brought in. We expect this human person to then look at the product of this system and take a decision that I approve this for payment or not. Now that person doesn't come in, the system then just simply passes all these claims. Then I'm still asking that quality control, then how do you then mitigate that lack of that human intervention? That is what I just want you, when you go back and then just start, then to think about it. You may not respond to me given the time that is left, but for your own system development and quality control, then it may be necessary. May you respond to some of the comments that have been made, if there are comments. But if there is a path course or whatever indicated such, then so that we can quickly get off this. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. The issue of chronic medication distribution, was in the previous action plan. And the program is now in place, and it's fully running. All the beneficiaries are on chronic medication. They don't have to go to pharmacies to get medication. So that gets delivered to them. With regard to rehabilitation centers, we're actually now in the final stages. We're working with National Treasury's Technical Assistance Unit. They're now helping the fund to develop a feasibility study, to do a feasibility study, so that based on that report, it would then help us in terms of identifying what type of model we must use in setting up the rehabilitation centers. So that work has already started. The project has been registered with the National Treasury, and so they're helping us to do that. In the new financial year, we should actually then be ready to, we should have the feasibility report, and then we should then be in a position to know what type of facilities we're going to have and how these are going to be managed. So that's something that may even be in the new five-year strategic plan in terms of how do we then roll them out over the next 5 years.
Okay, Chair, how are we managing with the numbers of inspectors that we have now? The reality, Chairperson, is that we need to manage the limited resources that we have and use them effectively. And this has always been the strategy that we have employed to make sure that we get maximum impact and efficiency on the numbers that we have. Deployment of these small numbers of inspectors, is how we deploy them is very, very important. And of course, the Honorable Bagrim made a very important point with regards to the integration that I spoke about between the government entities, the compensation fund, UIF, and SAS. I think that integration is very, very important, so that we know that whatever information that SAS is sitting with is information that we could have access to for decision making and for us to plan our work properly. So we're working, we're working towards that. Like the point I raised earlier on, that for us it's important that we have access to CIPRO, which we now have, and Compensation Fund is busy developing its system, and that system will interface with CIPRO, will interface with UIF, and of course we will interface with the receiver of revenue as well. So that work, Chairperson, is underway, and these inspectors, as is the norm in the department, we equip them with tools of trade. They will have a cell phone, iPad, or laptops that are linked to the system. So they don't even have to come to the office. They just work wherever they are and only come to the office on a Friday in some instances, so that the supervisor can monitor the work that they are doing. So that's how they work. Are these reports? Are there reports for the for inspections that we've, or the investigation we've done to the top 20 companies that are contributing to our injuries? The commissioner has indicated that already there's work that has been done. We were not aware that the committee will require that kind of information, but if the committee requires that kind of information, we could make it available to the committee, that information. Honorable Muteka and Honorable Mutambi raised the question relating to the turnaround time on the filling of vacancies. The challenge that we're sitting with, Chairperson, is that most of these posts are highly specialized posts. And the reality is, government is not paying enough compared to the private sector in terms of the skills and the competences that we require. So that's the difficulty that we're sitting with. You would have someone, for instance, the doctor that left in Eastern Cape. She wasn't happy that we're paying the amount of money that we're paying her, so she went for greener pastures. The way we set ourselves up as government, and Honorable Mutambi would know this because she was the minister of DPSA, is that the notches are set from one level to the maximum. And you can't do anything once you reach the maximum. And if you reach the maximum, for instance, you are at a personal scale, and then if there are increases, for instance, you'll get the normal increases, but you can't get what we call a pay progression because you're on a personal scale. So these are the issues that we're dealing with that are not attractive to young professionals who are in the private sector. So we're now, trying to make sure that we at hand, we go to institutions. So it's a very difficult exercise that we're undertaking, and we would love to create a situation where recruitment takes as shortest period as possible, because we need these resources. Not like we created posts just for those posts to be there. We really need the resources. The commissioner will talk to the issue of the audit action plan. But I just want to reflect, Chairperson, although you said we must come back, you're not expecting us to respond to this question now. The outstanding claims, I think one of the mistakes that we made long time ago, and that's why we're sitting with these claims now, all claims, there's what I call a competent application, right? So a competent application requires that you have all the documents in place. Now, in the absence of all the documents, you cannot register a claim, because the application is not a competent application. So what we did, we registered all these claims, even though we knew that they were outstanding information. So they then sit in the system as outstanding claims. Yet, we knew from the beginning that they were outstanding information. Now, we also rely on two things, on one thing that, or two things. One, the injured person has a responsibility to report, to lodge the claim. The employer has a responsibility to report the incident. And also, the employer has a responsibility to see that the medical reports are submitted. So I'm just painting this picture, Chair, so that you understand the dilemma that we're sitting with. And the point that you're raising, that one who's sitting with a claim must make a judgment. So which means that if there's a claim and it's got outstanding information, so the person must say, no, this is not a competent claim, and therefore we're repudiating the claim on the basis of outstanding information. That happens. And that's why I think Honorable Bagrem was talking about the appeals process that are very difficult, and you require a legal person to assist you with that. I think that once we get to that stage, people abandon they decide to abandon the process because of the difficulties that Honorable Bagrem has mentioned. Be that as it may, Chairperson, we take your point. We want these claims to be paid. We want the claimants to get whatever is due to them. Thanks.
No, thanks. My issue is when the claimant has got all the information, but what is lacking is from the employer that has got no control over. What will be the judgment?
No, we send inspectors.
You see. But if the information that is lacking is from the claimant, it's another matter, because he's in control of that information. But if the information that is lacking is from the employer that is bankrupt and now is liquidated, is no longer in business, or the people that he worked with 30 years back are no longer there, and they are not willing to actually produce the document, do you really punish the claimant? And then if the claimant has submitted everything from his side, and then the other people then are not able to submit the documents that you need, then that's why I'm saying some sort of judgment and decision-making is required, because the normal system then doesn't apply.
Yes.
It doesn't apply. But for you to close the file, some determination must be made. That's why we've got problems here, is that certain documents or blah, 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 court cases. And then if you've gone to court because of certain things, then you get an adverse ruling at the lower court. But then when you go to the constitutional court, then you get a decision made, whether there is compliance or whatever, then a decision is made and expected to comply. And those kind of things. Is for us to close the accounts or close the claims, some decision has to be taken, but must be appropriate decision. There must be rational thinking in that decision making. It must not just be an arbitrary decision making. But at the end of the day, is we must less disadvantage the claimant. Must less disadvantage the claimant. And let's speak to the top 20 honorable members. The top 20 briefing or report on the 6th of March. On the 6th of March, talk to us. We'll give you space, and then you talk to us. Why these companies, what informs their accident, what sort of response has you made, what sort of successes are you achieving? Sestemar. Dangi. Thank you very much. And then, honorable members, then we need to move to the next one, Unemployment Insurance Fund, if we can just get them ready. Thanking the Compensation Fund Commissioner and the DG for having assisted us in understanding some of the issues that relates to this particular matter. There is still quite a lot of work that we need to do. One of the things that you have told us is that your budgeting system is not correct, and then it needs cleaning up and re-corrections and all that. Now, please pay attention to that. Get all the specialist people that can assist you to make sure that the budget that you put up reflect your operations. It must not contradict your operations. And then we don't actually find ourselves having some sludge funds that we can't explain. And Umvido. Thank you, UIF. And together with your Director General, if you are ready, you may proceed. But we don't have all the time.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, members. On the sake of time, Chairperson, I will request members that we can just go straight to slide 15. Okay, in terms of the Unemployment Insurance Fund, we also have three programs. Program number one, which is administration. Program number two is business operation, which is the core of the UIF. And program three, which is the labor activation fund. And we've got about six strategic objectives that we have set for ourselves with about 16 indicators. In this slide, it's just giving the comparison in terms of quarter one, how we performed together with quarter two. But what we also did is to include where we were in quarter two in the previous financial year, just to do the year-to-year comparison. In terms of the first strategic objective, which is to ensure financial sustainability, we had planned three indicators, and in quarter one, we achieved the three. Together, also in quarter two, we also achieved the three. The second one is on strengthening institutional capacity of the fund, which obtained the vacancy rate. We've got one indicator under that, which was achieved in quarter one. However, we did not perform well in quarter two on the same indicator. The third one is about provide easy-to-use services through multiple channels. This is targeting to how the clients access the services to us. In terms of the fund, we've got two planned indicators. In quarter one, we achieved one. We achieved 50%, but in quarter two, we didn't achieve both of them. And in the next slide that will come, I'll give detail on these indicators that are not achieved. The other one is on the improve of service delivery, which is talking more on the business operation, which is the core for the fund. In quarter one, we achieved 50%, and in quarter two, there was an improvement from 50% to 83%. And the other one is collaborate with stakeholder to improve compliance to the UI legislation. We've got two blend indicators in there. In quarter one, we achieved 50%. And in quarter two, we improved and we achieved all the two at 100%. The last one is about the enhanced employability of the UI beneficiaries to enable entrepreneurship and preserves of jobs. In quarter one, we achieved 50%, and also in quarter two, the performance remained the same at 50%. That gave us about 63% overall performance for the fund in the first quarter, and in the second quarter, it was still the same percentage as 63%. Compared to where we are in the last financial year, we are sitting in quarter two at 58%, so it's about improvement of 5% if you compare to the previous year. In terms of program one, in the next page,
Just a sentence for us to be able to follow you. Let's talk about enhanced employability of UIF beneficiaries.
Yes.
Quarter one, you planned two.
Yes.
You achieved one.
Yes.
One is lacking.
Yes.
Then when you go to quarter two, you had two.
Yes.
Then you achieved one.
Yes.
Is this one that you have achieved the one of quarter one?
Yes,
that was lacking, which means in quarter two, then it's zero.
No.
How the one that you missed in quarter two, in quarter one,
okay,
have you attempted to complete it?
Okay.
Or what has happened?
All right. In quarter one, the indicator that we did not achieve is the same one that we did not achieve in quarter two. So the one that we achieved in quarter one is exactly the same one that we achieved also in quarter two.
Okay.
So in the next page, under the program one, the first one is about the percentage where we measure ourselves in terms of the expenditure, percentage expenditure, where we've got a cap, where we need to keep our expenditure variance to be less than 15%, and we achieved it at 11%. The other one was payment of invoices that we need to pay within 30 days, and we achieved and we've paid all our invoices within 30 days. The other one is on our SRI that we do through the PIC, where they were supposed to do commitment of about 40%, and we achieved on that, where we have done 94%. And the indicator that we did not do good on, which we achieved in the first quarter, but in the second quarter we did not achieve, is on the vacancy rate, where the target is 13%, and we were out by 1% because our vacancy rate was sitting at 14% at that stage. Now, the contributory factors to this is included in the slide that I will get members into at a later stage. But just to talk to this one, we had additional posts that we created. So immediately when you create new posts in your structure, it impacts your vacancy rate because it adds in terms of the number of posts that are now vacant. And we had to create the post for the call center environment, because we had limited capacity within our call center, because when we measured the number of calls we were getting vis-a-vis the resources that we were having calls that we could not attend to all the calls on time because of capacity issues. The other issue was for us to expand our call center to also provide the outbound services, because, I mean, currently we only do inbound services, which is call receivers. On the other one, it's where we were trying to, where our strategic objective is to assist the public in accessing the service of UI. So we entered into a project where we're going to provide the Wi-Fi into our different labor centers across the country. In terms of the target, we planned that we were going to provide 48 labor centers with the Wi-Fi services. We could only deliver 33 at the time. What we picked up at the time when we were rolling out, there were technical issues in terms of the different labor centers, especially the one that will be in the rural areas, where when they did the infrastructure, there were supposed to be some upgrade that needed to be done first before we could implement the Wi-Fi, which impacted in the delay. The other one is on the integrated claims management system that we had as a target. And I think members previously it was reported with the project that we undergone on SAP, where we the intention was to get the system similar to what DG was explaining earlier on, so that we are all operating one system that it can assist us in terms of interfaces for different services that we provide in the labor centers. So there were delays there in the appointment of the service provider, because we had the initial service provider and we had the second one that was supposed to come and finalize the work in terms of the report, because the development in the system was already done, but there were reports that were outstanding. So there was a delay on the contracting in that. However, this matter was eventually attended to. The service provider is on board now as we speak. Now, in terms of our core business, which is on the business operation, which deals with payment of benefit to our clients, for the unemployment benefit, which is one of our core benefits that we pay to our clients, it's about 80% of the benefit that we pay. Our target was to pay within 90% within 15 working days, and for quarter two we achieved, because we've paid that is 92% of our claims within the turnaround time that we've set. The second benefit type, which is the second biggest, is on maternity benefit, illness and adoption. The target was for us to pay 90% of those claims within 10 days, and we did achieve. We've paid all our maternity benefit and illness within the 10 working days. The one that we did not do good in the second quarter was on the death benefit, where the target was for us to make a payment within 20 working days. 90%, we were short with 1%. We've paid 89% within 20 working days. There we had a number of applications similar to what DG was explaining earlier on. We also had in the Gauteng province, especially in quarter one, which was impacted us when we calculated cumulatively, where they were sitting with a lot of applications that were received from the clients, where information was complete. However, there were outstanding information that we are supposed to get from the employers. So the process that we follow is, for as long as the information from the client is complete, we do take the application. But we find that we get delays when the employer is not giving us the information on time. And that was resulted in Gauteng. There were a number of applications that they took from clients, but the employers were delaying in providing us with the information. However, there was a catch-up project that was set up, where there was a team of people that were allocated to call all those different employers for them to give us the information. When we received the information, because we look at the date of application, it ended up impacting us on the turnaround time. However, the improvement changed when we moved to quarter three. On the other strategic objective, still on business operation, which is the core, we also deal with benefit payments. The other indicators were measuring the time we take to process an application. This one, it talks about after the client now, because after an application has been approved, the client has to submit a continuation form where he indicates to us that he's still unemployed, provide with us the banking detail that we need to pay. There we measure ourselves to say within 6 working days when we receive those forms, we need to make the payment to the client. And we did very well, where we have achieved 98% of the payment that we make. The other one here, we measure ourselves on when companies want to register with the UIF. Our turnaround time is 2 days, and our target was we need to do 95% of this registration within 2 working days. We have achieved on that. 99% of the application we received for the new registrations were done within 2 working days. The other one is where we measure ourselves on the compliance certificate, because companies will come and apply for the compliance certificate and sometimes also the tender letter when they want to do business with government. And this is one indicator that we did not do good in the first quarter and the second quarter of the financial year. This was a process where it's a highly manual process currently. We only now in a process where we want to automate this process. So as a result, we were getting a lot of applications that the clients were submitting through a website. We've got a website where they can submit their request for the compliance certificate, and we've got people that access that website and they allocate to different teams that they need to deal with this application. So at the time, the process was there were different people allocated to manage that website on different basis, and they had to share the work equally to to the people that were dealing with it. But we've picked up when we were not performing well, when we did analysis, we've picked up that that allocation process was not working well. Because there were instances where the people that will work in the team will be going for a training for like 5 days. And when the work is allocated in their inbox, it will sit there and wait for them. And by the time they come back and attend to this application, and 5 days has already passed. So when we picked up those gaps, then we corrected it, and the performance improved in the following period. The one where we did not achieve under Program 3 was on training the beneficiaries, where we need to give them with a learning experience for them to be able to be employable and be back into employment. In terms of the target, we planned that at the time we'll train about 300,000 people that we need to train into different programs. We give them skills program, there's also learnership, there's also apprenticeship program that we give to them. In terms of how we were doing this process previously, we will approach institutions that we needed to work with. And partner with them so that we train this student that we identify. Sometimes we'll work with the sitters and approach them. But there was an issue that was raised to say we need to follow a transparent process. There were different views basically because we were following that process and auditors had a different view. We had to go to Treasury to find in terms of how we need to run with this process. And they indicated to us to say we need to run through a transparent process where we need to issue an advert where everyone can see. We need to sit and evaluate these institutions that we want to work with. However, it cannot follow the full-through supply chain processes because there we don't necessarily compare them according to price, because in a normal tender process, you'll evaluate service providers based on a price and you will take the highest one that you are looking for. But in a training program, because you offer different training and you work with different institutions. So there was a bit of clarity that we had to get at the time in terms of which one is the proper process, which delayed a bit. But the problem was resolved immediately after we had an engagement with Treasury. So we currently have run with that process. We end up issuing the RFQ to follow the process that we were advised on. But because of the time delay, so we lag behind in terms of training the number of people that we were supposed to train at the time. The last one on under Program 3 is also on training of layoff schemes where we need to deal with application. And according to the target, we need to finalize 90% of them within 20 working days when we receive those applications. They need to be finalized, either approved or rejected. And in the new, in the last financial year, all the application were done within 20 days. The other last two indicators, which also part of the program two, is on number of newly registered employers. On this one, that's when we're trying to increase compliance to make sure that we've got number of employers that are registered with the fund to make sure that their employees are covered for UIF. In terms of the target, we targeted 20,000 employers. For that second quarter, we managed to register 37,661. And what benefited for us is, besides the inspectorate that goes out and look at companies if they are registered, we also form partnership with different government departments in also trying, and also not only government department but other institutions as well, so we can collaborate and work together and assist each other in how we register these people. So what also benefited us was we worked with Department of Education where we were trying to get these people that normally work at the school to provide the feeding schemes that give food to kids during the in those school feeding program. And we worked with Department of Education where we run it nationally, where we get these people to be registered for UIF. And that's what has benefited that partnership in us achieving number of when we get those schools to be registered. also at the same, we also give ourselves target to say, much as we want to register employers, we must make sure that there's also a number of employees that are covered for UIF as well. So we had a target that was focusing on employees that must be registered by the fund, and we did very well on that, different communication campaign and project that we engage on. The next slide, on slide 23, I've already touched on it when I was presenting, because it's just explaining what make us not to achieve and what have we done so far. So as I was presenting, I went through those reasons as well. On slide 24, it's just trying to give a breakdown, and I'm not going to go through all of them for the sake of time, but it's just giving us on the same one that I've reported on benefit payment, on how we have done per different provinces. So this one, it has just broken down those claims into different provinces. So if members allow, then I will not go through the detailed slides. And then the next slide, I will request us to move to slide 34, sorry. Yes, where we do, how we link our expenditure to our organizational performance. In terms of the performance that I just presented, for Program 1, we spent only 36% in Kota 1-2 of the target that we, of the budget, sorry, that we have planned for ourselves. And in terms of performance for Program 1, we were sitting at 50%. So in terms of the performance, we were sitting at 50%. In terms of the budget, we only spent 36% of the budget. In the next page, it's just even indication of what make us not to achieve. If members recall, I presented that we did not achieve on the vacancy rate, which is where the crux of the most budget sit under Program 1, under the post that we budgeted for. And because we did not achieve the target in filling those posts in the time as we were supposed to, that also impacted on us, impacting on the budget that we did not spend. But the other one also, it's on when we did the budget at the beginning of the year, because we know on annual basis, especially when it's due as the end of the financial year, there's overtime that we have to work to make sure that we get our financials prepared on time and all of that. However, when we budget, so we accommodate that overtime into our budget, but there was a circular that was issued regarding overtime with the cost of trying to minimize the cost. For an example, people no longer allowed to work overtime on Sundays, because normally in the past on Sundays we were paying double the rates. So as a result, because we have already budgeted for, but when the circular came, we have to align with the circular. So in terms of the amount we budgeted for, we end up spending less than what we anticipated. But also what sit in that also is the management fees that we pay to PIC. Now, we normally give PIC new mandate in terms of where they need to spend where they need to invest. And normally when we give them a new mandate, that's where there's a lot of money get to be spent, because there's a lot of work that they need to do. If they need to buy into a new instrument that we want them to buy in, the cost becomes higher than when they just maintaining where they have already invested in. So in the first quarter and the second quarter, we didn't give any new mandate to PIC. We're only doing it now. So as a result, we spent lesser than what we anticipated for the first and second quarter. So that also impacted on the under expenditure under Program 1.
Are you talking about the same PIC that is in the news?
Yes. Okay. And then on the under Program 2, if members recall, under Program 2, I reported that's where we achieved a lot. In terms of performance, we are sitting at 75%. So in terms of performance, we achieved 75%. In terms of the budget, we have spent 85% of the budget. In Program 2, where we have not, where we have underspent, because we've got underspendage of about 15%, what contributes to that is basically on benefit payment. Where what normally happens is at the beginning of the financial year, when we do the budget, basically, the actuaries do assumptions for us. They basically will look at our history in terms of benefit payments that we have made in the past. They will also look in terms of the performance of the market, and they will anticipate to say for UIF you're going to get more benefit in the coming financial year also. So basically our budget is more based on assumption. And normally you find that's where we'll spend less than what was anticipated because the budget was more based on assumption that the actuaries will make. So also in this, that's where we see that we did not spend according to an assumption that the actuaries have made. But when we look into our comparison, we've paid more benefit as compared to the previous year. So it's not like we spent less or there was a decrease on the benefit that we have paid. It's just that because actuaries take into account a lot of things when they did the assumption, that's what has caused the difference in there. The other issue is on the SARS commission that we pay. We also budget at the beginning of the year where we anticipate the actuaries also assist us on that. We will indicate to say, no, our revenue is going to increase. We take into account the CPI and the GDP. And in most of the instances, based on the target of revenue compared to what we actually collected, it becomes less. And because in terms of SARS, whenever they collect more revenue, we pay them more commission. So if they did not collect revenue in line with what we budgeted, it means we'll be paying less in commission as well. So that's what has impacted on the underperformance on there. Program 3 is the same one that the chair was relating to, where I indicated earlier on about where we were supposed to could have already trained about 300,000 people and we did not. And that's where the budget under expenditure is sitting at 93%, because if members can recall on that, at that stage we are only sitting with about 2,000 people that were trained against a target of 300,000. So that's what has contributed to the 93% under expenditure. But besides the issue of the training, in other programs within the labor activation program as well, is the process that we follow is we pay different institutions that we work with in tranches. So one of the key thing is before we release the next tranche, the service provider will have to account for the first tranche that we have paid for. And in an instances where there is no reconciliation, we don't release the next tranche, which sometimes impact on the budget or the money that we spend. For an example, with institution we work with to train people, before we release the payment to pay them the first tranche, we need proof that there were students in class, they did attend, so there needs to be attendance register, number of things that this institution must provide to us before we release the payment. And in instances where we haven't received all the recommendation or they have not given us account on how they've spent the money, that's what normally causes the delay. Chair, that brings me to the end of the two presentation.
Yeah, I'm interested in the last comment that you have made. You bring in a program to train people, then you get a trainer, then you give the trainer funds to train, then the trainer administratively fumbles in accounting, and then you don't give the trainer additional money for the next cycle or session to train. In principle, you are closing the training. Although is that you are busy with financial control and management, but when you don't give him the money to continue to train, you are actually closing that training program. Because surely if he doesn't receive anything, he can't proceed with the training while he's having some sort of accounting problems and administrative problems of accounting the money. And then now it's something may need to be devised in order to ensure the sustainability of your training program. There may be a need of a little bit of an effort that must come in. Otherwise, we'll always start training, and then you have got my big brother has received this program now to train people. He gets the first tranche. He takes the money, go and buy a 4x4. You see. and hoping that other money will come the next 3 months, then nothing comes because he can't account. Then the training is stopped. You may not think that you are stopping the training, but when you stop the funding, you are stopping the training. That is the direct consequence. Honorable members, Bahram, then followed by Muteka, followed by Mutambi, and then closed by Teko. In that order.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of things I have. First of all, there's still the major problems when you walk in to your centres. There's still long queues. There's still people not showing where they have to queue. They don't know what paperwork they need. We have spoken about this over the last 4 years, and I know the Director General had promised that they was going to have like a system like they have at the CCMA where you could get advice from people up front, what you need, what to do, how to fill in the forms, that sort of thing. It's still not there. The department should be able to actually move some staff to help UIF because they've got a lot less work now. Most of the real complaints go to the CCMA. All the complaints about finance go to the CCMA. So they've got a lot less work, and they've got a lot of staff who've got very little to do, and maybe they should move them through to UIF. You need that advisory service. Your online capability is still most of the time down. It's still almost impossible to work. It's a real problem, and maybe you need someone who understands a computer to help you out and restructure it. It's a real problem. When people aren't registered for the UIF, normally you are the first port of call. When someone loses their job, gets dismissed or retrenched or has to resign because they've been forced to resign, they try and get hold of the UIF and then they find out they're not registered. Can you explain to us what you do? What do you do to that person? Do you normally just send them away and say, look, you're not registered, sorry, we can't help you? And that's normally the message I'm getting from people. It's a real problem. You said your call center's a little bit overburdened. Well, I don't know about a little bit. It's almost useless. People are complaining all the time they can't get through, and when they do get through, they don't get proper advice. The training layoff scheme is still a nightmare. Most people aren't using it because they're saying it's too onerous. It's hardly used. I mean, you've got, I don't know how many, a few dozen companies that have applied. It's just too onerous. What are you going to do when EdCon closes, when you've got 140,000 people claiming UIF, and then we think it's about double that amount of the supplying companies, so probably another 200. So we call it 350 to half a million people claiming UIF when they close down. If they close down, I suspect they will. Do you have the extra funding for it in the PIC? Because I know everyone else is trying to put their hands on the PIC money. Maybe you can talk about that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. In that order.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. I'm also interested in the last remarks of the presenter. But I think they are also in dilemma. You know, if the service provider has misused the funds, always the ground suffers. It works everywhere, it's not only with them. The roads are not completed, the houses and everything, because somebody else didn't do it. So at the end, I think the question should be, how do you punish somebody who have forced you to stop the training because of or he can't account to or she can't account? How do you penalize such a person? That is my first question. Chairperson, I'm more interested and concerned about Program 1, page 35. I mean, slide number 35. The underspending of 64%. The explanation we are getting there, number one, point number one there, of overtime, it doesn't make sense. we have understand because we worked overtime. Overtime should be an excuse for overspending. So it doesn't make sense. The rest. Yes, I heard that as well, but still overspending, underspending because of our time. I think they have to reconstruct the reason somehow. And so the last question is there any possibility of spending this money in this last quarter? That is the last question.
Honorable Mutambi.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is on slide 23. With regard to the percentage of the vacancy rate reduced. On the action to be taken to resolve the problem, you're saying adverse close on the 13th of August. 2018. But then again, you're saying most vacant positions have been advertised on the same column. What is the status of that? Those filling of it? If they've closed 13th of August, what is the status of that? And then with regard to the number two, on the number of provincial sites with upgraded sites. The reasons for variance is the delay of equipment. And then on the action to be taken, we think the project, the matter has been escalated with the executives of the supplier, and then the scope will be increased to cater for the backlog. But I think you are leaving it open-ended. What is the timeline and the turnaround time to that effect? Going to slide number 43. On page 22 of the presentation, audit action plan. No timeline, no responsibility, who's going to do what, but likely enough when you turn across the page, slide number 47, there was a meeting that was held by the internal audit on the 28th of October, and then Chief Doug Rockwell's were requested to submit the action plans based on the internal audit plan as well. I'm raising this shape because there were the issues that were raised by the AG looking at this audit action plans without timelines and that are just generic. It's going to be very difficult to follow up the issues. Do we have the revised audit action plans? And then what is what are the status? Because I think that could have been attached and us being given the progress to that report. This looks like malicious compliance, Chairperson. I've got difficulties with it under the circumstances, living on the quality of documents that are submitted to us for the sake of us to do oversight. Thank you.
Do you have anything, Honorable Teko? Or accommodated?
I think some partly Honorable Mutambi cover part of the concerns that I have, but I need to check there on, I think it's slide page 9, slide 17 and 18. There is the program one, when you compare it to page, the underspending, I think. Page 18. Maybe I was not concentrating. They will help me out here. the vacancy there is reduced, I think, and the program there is not achieved, but there's 28 new posts that were added into the establishment. The outcome on the other side, it says 64% understanding, and program one has understand on okay the issue of the fund is in the process of filling the vacant position. Those are, I don't know how to put it, but I am saying there's a vacancy that side is understand. Maybe they will take me out of that dilemma. The issue of Wi-Fi access to still is program one. Number of provincial sites upgraded with free Wi-Fi access, which is 48, not achieved 33. I want to check the value or this Wi-Fi access. Is it blocked to do only the UIF things, or people will be on WhatsApp? I don't know. Is it monitored? Because I know when there's a free Wi-Fi, everybody will be on site. We will go there and sit and access Wi-Fi, and it will be for a free for everybody. How do you manage that process itself? Because you might say you are creating something, but you are creating a problem on top of what is happening. And people will be able also to access information and the internet, and then your system will break. The virus and everything, all those kind of security on the system, your system itself. How are you protecting it yourself by implementing this Wi-Fi access? If the system crashed, are you be in the position to know who was there, who was on site, who accessed which document at which? Because there are people who are very clever than any other, even the system itself. So I want to find out on that access that you are giving to people on, are we putting the department at risk on that point, or we are going to have more problems because of that access people are having on that system? I think maybe they will understand technically. You understand my point. Thanks, Chair.
No, okay, thanks. Honorable Fascalvi.
Thank you, Chair. I'm mostly covered by my previous colleagues, also wanting to appreciate the presentation has been made. I want to make a special mention in terms of the area that you indicated that you've zoomed into, and it is registration of the employees who's currently dealing with the school feeding scheme. So I think we need to put the message out there and conscientize people out there so that they can be aware of the benefit that is there. Yeah, and in terms of SGBs not being compliant, zoom into that area, liaising with the Department of Basic Education in terms of that one. It's a good move, I would say. Then, Chairperson, in terms of the AG audit matrix on page 40, or slide 40, we've seen that there's a total finding of 71, and we are speaking about the report of the second quarterly report, and the percentage completion is standing at 39%. So can we have an indication of why we are not reaching, we are not more towards a 50% or more completion? And is it possible to deal with all the findings that has been identified before the end of the financial year. And if you're experiencing difficulties, what are the difficulties and how do you plan on addressing those issues? Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much. And also, of course, is that I had a worry on this. I'm not sure whether we should not ask UIF just simply to just give us some sort of a report on slide 38. That's slide 38. The 71 findings and what is that that you are doing with the 71 findings and which ones you will be unable to deal with and what would be the reasons. Because surely that when you look, when you go to on slide 40, you then record zero percentages on certain, or let me not talk about the rest. Let's just talk about the first one of supply chain management, which is the source of all problems of auditing. And then you record 15% on quarter two, when you were supposed to be, if we're talking about the progressive work of dealing with these challenges, then it should be somewhere around 50%. And if it is a once-off issue that you want to deal with, you deal it with once and it's 100%. But then after quarter two, then you are still sitting on 15%, and the Auditor General is busy with your audit again now. You're going to raise other issues over and above these ones, which means it's now dealing with audit outcomes is going to become your core business. It can be your core business. But when you've got all of these still remaining, that means now is the next audit cycle will produce other issues. And it will even repeat some of these things that you have not completed. It will still repeat them. And then you're going to end up having to employ a director that deals with audit action plan. After completing that, then you fire him. Now, some sort of attention needs to be given that those that can be finalized, I mean, after the audit has come out, within 3 months, you should have actually cleared those that are cleared, that can be cleared. And then you can't say you're going to work for the next 12 months on clearing them. It doesn't make sense. DG, I really don't know. Maybe there is an explanation. The entities are recording vacancy rates, and some of the vacancy rates then may not be in the high echelons of their organograms. But as the Department of Labor, we are keeping a register of job seekers. We're keeping a register of job seekers. And we're talking about thousands of people that are registered on that database. What makes us to the entities to have this high vacancy rates even on those levels of call centers or something, where you need just a matriculant or something with some sort of computer training and the rest. But when you are keeping the register where we can identify people, place them, or whatever processes that require, what is difficult? And then the other one, of course, is the death claims. There must be a way of fast-tracking the death claims. Because sometimes it's breadwinners that die, and when the death claims don't get processed, then you plunge that family into poverty. And surely there must be an urgent attention and a real considerate attention. You may proceed to respond, and when you are ready. And some of the responses must be reasonably brief, but still make the sense. Proceed.
All right. Thanks, Chair. I think the first question was the issue of training. To say when there's issues, we stop the training. What we normally do is when we enter into agreement with the providers, we sign a contract at the beginning of the year where we agree on the deliverables. And we also agree on what we expect of them to provide to us before we provide, before we release payment to them. So normally in this training, what gets to be delayed is just the payment, but the training doesn't get to be stopped because we have signed a contract with them that they need to train the student. And in this instance, it's the service provider themselves not providing the necessary documentation that we require from them. However, in all this program, normally it will just delay the payment, but the payment will eventually be paid. It's just that we could have not paid them at the period where we're supposed to pay. There will be a month delay, but they will be paid in the previous period. So we have never encountered any instances where we stop the training completely. It's just that while the training is continuing, the service provider will be bearing the pain of them not being paid, but the fault is theirs because whatever that we expect of them was agreed upon at the contract stage. The other issue was the problem that was raised in terms of the problem of the long queues in our labor centers. Like we've indicated previously, we have appointed a service provider, so the project is under running where we are implementing the queue management system in different labor centers. So we just started in the third quarter. Yes, in the third quarter, we have not reported about it because we are focusing on quarter one and quarter two. But on quarter three, we appointed the service provider. Currently, they have done the first phase. We have rolled out the queue management system to about 30 labor centers already across different countries. But what we... According to different provinces, sorry. Okay. But what we also... Yes, but what we have also done is we're not just rolling the system. We also appointed the queue marshal together with the system because even though there's a queue management system, the queue marshal responsibility will be looking at the documents of the client because we have picked it up as well that the clients were complaining that they queue the whole day in the labor center. Only at the late in the afternoon, you're told that you were supposed to bring this documentation and all of that. So part of rolling out the system, we're rolling out also with the queue marshal that attend the client while in the queue to check the documentation and all of that. So I think when we come and we report in the other quarters, we'll be giving the full report in terms of how far we have gone with the rollout of that. But it's progressing very well in the labor centers we have implemented so far. The online capability, our e-filing system, we unfortunately it has taken time than what we have anticipated with the modernization because one of the biggest issues on e-filing currently as it is designed, it's not user-friendly to know what you need to do. I mean, one basic thing that we are modernizing there is the reset of the password. Where currently you go there, you lock yourself, you have to call in someone internally, and sometimes it takes time to get even that to be resolved. So a part of the modernization, we're changing the system, the look and feel. We're trying to make it to be more user-friendly, but we're giving more control to the employers for them to be able to change password on their own, submit information and all of that. So in terms of the project plan, there were glitches that we had because one of the core new filing is for the employer to submit their employee information. So on the modernization project, the service provider that we are working with, which is the service provider that designed the first new filing, the same service provider that have designed the e-filing for SARS. there were major issue when we were dealing with the declaration, which is the core of the system, which has caused the delay in rolling out the system on the implementation. But the report that we got now was we'll be ready to roll out the new system at the end of April 2018. So we are closely monitoring the project. What we don't want to... Sorry? 2019. Yes, Tisha. I've lost track of time. Okay. When people are not registered with the fund, when they come to apply, which we find in most of the instances, the approach we have taken at UIF is when something is not at the fault of the client, it's with the employer. We have taken the responsibility that we sort it out with the employer ourselves. So where someone, which in most of the instances we picked up, where that someone are not in our database, we do take the application and we follow up with the employer themselves. However, it does impact us on the turnaround time because the time we take following up with the employer for them to register, because sometimes you find that this person has been in employment for 7 years and the information was never provided for the 7 years. Before we can assess that claim, we must first assist the employer to give us the 7 years information, capture it in the system, reconcile it, and only then deal with the application. So in most of the instances, that's where you will pick up that in other provinces, their turnaround time is a bit down. But it's because of the approach we have taken that we don't want to make the employee suffer because of the problem of the employer. The other one was the call center to say people are complaining that they cannot get through. Like I've indicated when I was explaining why did we increase capacity, that's the current challenge that we sit with, because we currently have a national call center and it's running with about 60 people. So when we look at the number of calls we get per day vis-a-vis the people that we have, we realize that we didn't have enough capacity, and that is why we embarked in that project where we get additional 28 labor call center people so that we address this issue that client cannot get access to our call center. There was also the issue of EDCON. I'm not sure if DJ want to assist me on that one.
Okay. Firstly, let me start with the training layoff scheme. I know Chair Honorable Bakrin is it's not really that fond of the training layoff scheme, but the training layoff scheme was also the outcome of the job summit, where the job summit, it was indicated that we need to review the way the training layoff scheme works, and that we have done. So you have one institution now that deals with all the applications, the evaluation, and that institution is the CCMA. So already from the time we had the job summit to date, 11 companies have been assisted, and 905 jobs have been saved. So the system is now working smoothly because of the review that we have made. So we've improved the turnaround time when it comes to that. Chair, the UIF will always be ready to deal with any large number of workers that are retrenched. Just on the EDCON matter, we preparing ourselves. We have engaged with EDCON. We have engaged with the PIC. We are certain that all of us have done whatever is necessary for all of us to do to make sure that those jobs are saved. At this stage, that's the only thing that I can say. Given the stage at which the discussions are at, it's our responsibility as a department to preserve job losses, and we're doing whatever we can to see to it that those job losses are are preserved. And in the event, Chair, that we have to, in the event that there's retrenchment and we have to pay, we have already worked it out that it's going to cost us an amount of about 1.2 billion. 1.2 billion. Just to pay ordinary UI benefits. So if it comes to that push, we'll be able to pay. But we don't want it to get there, and that's why we have instruments that we can use to make sure that we prevent that those kinds of large retrenchments, and we're doing exactly that.
Okay, thanks, DJ. Then the next question was also on the audit action plan, to say the plan that we presented doesn't have the timelines and responsible people. We do have the detail, and I think we'll provide that. We do have an audit action plan. I think we made a mistake when we were summarizing for the committee, because we just gave the number of audits that we have, how much we have resolved, what are the percentage that we sit with. However, we have an audit matrix. So in the audit matrix, it indicates each and every finding in terms of what Auditor General have raised. We, each directorate or each responsible manager, have put in a plan in terms of what is it that they're going to do to address the finding and what are the timelines. And that report is what we get to be monitored by the commissioner on a monthly basis as we report our performance. We also have to report on how far are we in addressing our audit findings. And also this is monitored through our audit committee in terms of how we fare on that. And just to deal with the other question that was talking about why we only sitting with 39% and not at least 50% on the audit findings. If members recall, we are reporting on quarter two, which is ending in September. Normally, we get the final audit report by the end of July. So this is the progress as it what we did during August and September, because the final audit report was just issued in July. So this is only it's reflecting the performance of what we did just in 2 months. But when you look at our audit action plan at this stage, we have progressed along in terms of addressing the audit finding. And there was also another question in terms of what are issues that we will not be able to solve at the end of the financial year. If members recall, one of the big findings that actually changed our opinion was relating to the investment, where we needed to do disclosure in terms of GRAP 6, 7, and 8. For us to do that, we needed to develop policies and procedures, and all those things are done. However, you will get the final one, and the auditors will have to come and test us how we have disclosed in the current financial year. It means when we issue our financial statement in May, the auditors will go and test for us if we have disclosed in line with that new GRAP standard. The only issue that we might still be sitting with, but we are working together with the auditors, was we are doing investment in the associate companies, and one of the requirements of the standard is when we do our financial statement, when we disclose institutions, the auditors wanted to rely on the audited financial statement of those companies for them to put reliance on the figures we have put in our financial statement. And the issue that we have discussed with the auditors was the reality of the matter is these companies are in different industries than we are, and their financial year end is not aligned with our financial year end. And as an investee, as an investor in those companies, you find that we are in a minority percentage shareholding in those companies, so we are not able to influence for them to even change their financial year-end, which in most of the instances will not be feasible. But what we have agreed with the auditors was we'll put in our own internal control, because the auditors have said to us we need to give to them what have we done to try to address this issue and how reliable are the figures we put in our financials. And we indicated of the verification that we're going to be doing ourselves on monthly basis. So there's a reconciliation statement that we put, validate information with PIC. But what we also do is we set our internal audit will go and audit this financial, I mean this institution, so that we can put reliance on the report of internal audit. At this stage, we're still discussing with the new auditors that are in, but this was the agreement that we had with the previous auditors that we have. But this issue will only be able to get finality on it when we produce the new financial statement. So that is the only issue that might still be thorny, but we have put in action in place to address it. The other question was in the reasons for variance, we're talking about 28 posts that were closed in August, but again we're talking about a vacant post that will be filled, and which one is talking to which. On the variance, we spoke about the call center post because those were the big one, but those are not the only posts that were vacant. We also, when we look at when we did our percentage, we indicated that we had about 75% posts that were vacant. So the one that were closed in August was for the call center one. However, other posts, the remainder of the 75 were the one that we say they were advertised, and we are in a process to fill them. And I think we'll give the status in the next report in terms of how far are we in the next quarter. The other one was about the vacancy and the 64%, the underspending. To say what actually, how does this relate to the underexpenditure of 64%? When I was explaining the underexpenditure, I indicated that the vacancy rate is not the only thing that has impacted on this underspending. I indicated that the biggest issue was on the management fees that we have budgeted for PIC, which is where the chunk of the money sits. And I've indicated that when we budget, we take into account that we're going to give PIC a new mandate, which we're supposed to do on a yearly basis. But during quarter one and quarter two, we have not given PIC a new mandate. We did it later in the year. So when we do budget, normally for the new mandate, we estimate high cost, because with the new mandate, there can be a different asset class that we want to invest in. Now, the PIC, they start at the beginning in terms of the work to prepare, and normally it costs us higher in terms of the management fee. Unlike other investments that they've already made where they are just maintaining, the management fees is not that high. Now, the fact that we have not given them the new mandates during quarter one and quarter two, we couldn't spend on that management fees that we estimated at that period. So that was also contributed to the 64% underspending, not only the vacancy rate. The other one was on the issue of the Wi-Fi, on how secure it is, and people will end up being on Facebook and WhatsApp when they visit our labor center. When we roll out this, that's what we have taken care of, actually, from the system itself. People can only access the Department of Labor website. They cannot access anything else. So even if you come closer to the... It was designed, the security and the control were built in when the Wi-Fi system was designed from the beginning. And if you remember, I indicated at some stage we had to delay the process because of the technical requirement that we had to deal with. So the system is secured. To all the centers that we have rolled out, our systems are not impacted because people are not just accessing anything. It's only limited to Department of Labor Services, nothing else. Okay, the other one was just a comment that we need to work with the schools in making sure that we get this to be... And I think I've answered all the questions. The other one was on the findings, the audit finding, why only 50%, and I've tried to deal with all the audit findings when I was responding in one. I think that brings all my questions. Or the other one was, the last one was on the death benefit. To say we need to put action in place to address the issue of the best benefit. Yes, we did. Like I've indicated, it was just the issue of the backlog we have dealt with. Subsequent, currently, we are doing very well on death benefits. We have achieved that. What we have done is there were labor centers that were not processing previously. where an application will be taken in one office but has to be sent to another office to be processed, which was causing the delay. So if members could recall, there was at some stage where we presented that we appointed 258 additional CSOs. So after the appointment, we have now rolled out processing to almost all our labor centers. That has assisted also in the turnaround time in dealing with all these claims. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I just had some sort of an interest on your slide 62. Then I'm not seeing Mpumalanga, or maybe there's a reason why Mpumalanga is sidelined. But okay, I think we come into a close with UIF. And although is that Muteka has pledged some solidarity with you, the fact still remains, and my view still remains. Doesn't matter whether you've got a contract with a service provider for training and whatever. The fact of the matter is the Department of Labor is providing training. And you are just simply providing it through that service provider. But if that service provider then bungles administration and then you hold the funding, you are closing your own activity. You are disturbing, you are disrupting your own activity. Therefore, all what one is saying is that you just need to bring in some other things to assist in managing this particular process so that you still achieve the training that you want to provide. And I think that's what I just wanted to say. And also just simply to ask you to assess the capacity of your internal audit. You must assess the capacity of your internal audit. The weaker your internal audit, the weaker is compliance of your annual financial statement. And the stronger your internal audit, and then it would be, you will have annual financial statements that make sense. So you just need to look at those things and deal with them. Now, thanks for having graced this occasion, and we hope that you will send that detailed audit action plan, or call it matrix, to the secretary. And then for our consumption within the next 5 days or so. Thank you very much, and honorable members, Muteka, when you are finished speaking, then you call the Productivity SA to come on the stage. Thanks.
I think the chairperson's solidarity remark is misleading. You had to say it off record, not on record. Because I was saying the problem is across. It's not only to EUIF, it's across all service providers. It can happen, and it happens. Thanks very much.
You defied my request. Okay, I call Productivity SA to come on the podium.
Chairperson and honorable members, good day. I'm going to focus on a few slides, starting from slide 9 on page 5 of your slides.
Yep.
You would realize that we have, for the financial year 2018-19, identified 5 strategic objectives. In quarter one, we had 13. In quarter one, we had 8, as well as in quarter two. And if you look at our performance in terms of those strategic objectives, strategic objective one, it's the focus is on ensuring that we meet the treasury requirements in terms of settlement of claim of invoices within 30 days, and that we have achieved over that period of time. Strategic objective two is at the heart of the work that we do of promoting productivity to improve enterprise competitiveness and sustainability. For both quarter one and quarter two, we had in quarter one two indicators were achieved. One, in quarter two, we had two indicators we achieved. One, we are at 50%. Strategic objective three, it's also at the heart of our business, which is job preservation, the program called Turnaround Solutions. You would notice there that we had in the first quarter three indicators, same in the second quarter, and none has been achieved. In terms of strategic objective four, that's our research and information management services. We had one indicator in quarter one, and we achieved that. Nothing was planned for quarter two. And the last one, it's around promoting a culture of productivity and competitiveness. In the first quarter, we had one indicator and we achieved nothing. In the second quarter, we had two and we achieved one. If I take you to slide number 10, we're just giving you a picture on this slide of where we were in 2017-18 compared to 2018, and you'll pick up that the common denominator there, it's the Turnaround Solutions program. And I think I've reflected on this in the previous sittings at this committee, that we had to move from, which I believed was progressive improvement, from 66 to 68, but then in the 18-19 financial year, we dropped drastically to 37%. If I were to take the committee to slide 12, we have summarized on that slide the areas where there are challenges, but you'll find that in the body of the report, they are reflected as red. And I would like to go to those per slide. I would not focus my attention on the slides where we have achieved, but only on those where there are challenges. And as such, reflect on slide 16. If you look at that slide, you would realize that we had productivity awards planned, and we had 9 planned and 6 achieved. Now, here, because it's more about productivity awareness and also ensuring that those companies that we have assisted, we use them to attract more others to join the productivity movement, and that also get linked to the Turnaround Solutions program, because we then say if we have assisted a company out of a distress, you then check if they are sustainable and are still employing those workers, then you load them on the productivity awards. We could not achieve 3 productivity awards, particularly in the regions, and we then looked at hosting them in quarter three. The key challenges there, I should indicate, are more in the Free State as well as the Northern Cape, precisely because of the manner in which we're structured. We don't have presence in those two provinces, and it has been very difficult for us to penetrate that market. If you go to slide 17, there we're talking about the number of productivity champions, education, training, and skills development facilitators. These are people that we actually train so that they become productivity ambassadors, either in the workplace as well as in society in general. We planned in quarter one to do 60, and we only did 17. And there, the challenge was, again, the dependency that we had with the funding that we thought would receive in terms of the turnaround solutions. You'll see that coming again on slide 18, in terms of quarter two, the number of small and medium enterprises and cooperatives that we assisted, we planned 3,550, and we could only assist 839. I think it's important that I highlighted to the committee that with the two indicators that I have mentioned, the one on champions as well as small and medium enterprises, we've been able to make traction in quarter two, to the extent that the one on champions we have actually achieved in quarter two, both for quarter one and quarter two. So the committee should not be concerned on that area. With the one on small and medium enterprises, by quarter two, we had at least about 87 enterprises that we have assisted instead of 120. And we are confident that we will achieve that target by the end of the financial year. If you look at slide 19, again on that slide, we planned 25 and we could only achieve 16. This is the program that we call Workplace Challenge Program, and it's a very strategic program for the economy. However, we failed to achieve in that area. Also, to give an indication to the committee that by quarter two, we had already assisted 45 companies against a target of 50, so we missed our target by 50. And when I reviewed quarter three, we have achieved, we just from quarter one to quarter three, we have achieved in that area, so it's not a problem area. So if I were to sum up in terms of our performance, our area of challenges, Chairperson, as per slide 22. And there, I must indicate, after having realized that there's no movement in this area, management approached the board to say we cannot continue like this and the program has been suspended whilst we are having engagements with the department and turnaround. I'm sorry, UIF. So the program remains suspended. So if I come to any committee beyond this period, there will not be anything reported on this matter. To the extent that the board then approached the minister to remove this target from the annual performance plan. If I were to go to slide 26 on the financial report, we had budgeted in terms of revenue 98 million for the semester, and we could only generate 39, and you can see the implications of if funding does not come through in terms of the unemployment insurance fund, that 54 million, it throws our budget into disarray. And then effectively,
which slide are you now?
On slide 26.
The numbers there, they are in millions or in thousands or what?
It's millions, Chair. So as I indicated, let me put it on.
Where they are, then we are simply talking about thousands, yeah. When you look at the table, you can proceed.
Thank you, Chair.
Understand that you're meant to be there.
Yes. And just to indicate that once you budgeted and planned around a particular funding source, and you don't get that, it has implications for service delivery. And that's where we are, Chairperson, to the extent that you can see that if we move at this rate, we are facing a deficit at the end of the financial year. That ends my presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Probably last time when we met your entity, there were certain discussions and certain proposals, and you have not talked to those. And it would have been appropriate that you talked to those. Members, I think they said what they said during that engagement. And if you could just in a minute or so just indicate to us what has happened in relation to sorting out the funding problem. I know that we have received some sort of a communique that you wanted to come down here then to come and deal with the issues of the funding, which it is scheduled on the 27th of February, I think so. But what is that that you did on what members proposed? Unless if you want to reserve it to next week or so, you may proceed if you have got a comment.
Chair, the discussions took place between us and the DG, and I think they were too late for this, to the extent that in essence the reason why the board took a decision to suspend the program is because there's no funding at all for the 2018-19 financial year. So we're closing the year with a challenge. Much of what we were engaging on is what do we do in terms of 2019-20? Also given the fact that if you look at the Job Summit resolutions, there are over five indicators that are related to productivity, say, on job preservation. So we were talking around how do we salvage that so that we're able to, as we go into the 19-20 financial year, that's funding at the beginning of the financial year.
Okay. Honorable members, you have heard him. And when we create an institution, there is a service delivery that institution must do. And then when it ceases to operate or ceases to close, ceases its operations, it's not assisting us to achieve that. Mutega. Honorable.
Chairperson, we have a problem. Let me just start by going to slide number 9. Without going into details, when you look at that thing, you can see that the entity is not working. it is not working. But when you look at number 3, indicator number 3 or problem number 3 on the same slide, it says provide support to companies facing economic distress to retain jobs. That's what we need the most in South Africa. The country needs that the most. We just spoke of Edco, and there are many. So how, if we say we achieve nothing from that kind of program, where are we heading to? And then my question is to DG. Do you still need this NGD really? Because if it's not funded, it means it's not needed anymore. And if we are freezing, we don't need it anymore, what do we put in to substitute the things that the very important things that were supposed to be delivered, as I have pointed number 3 on slide 9. What is it? Does the, what do you call it, this IDC? Does it come into place, or do their work, is their work far apart from each other? I don't know. Somehow you have to school us, because we need a remedy of this problem, as I indicated on number 3. We need a remedy. Thanks very much.
Honorable Cheko.
Thanks, Chair. I think same slide that Mateka was with. I don't know whether the percentage is the same. When the performance, it says 50%, but nothing has been achieved. Maybe you'll explain that further on number 5. When you say promote social dialogue, the annual plan was 2. Achieved 0, but the percentage is 50. I don't know what is the explanation on that. Explanation, unless my 4 eyes are not telling me what I'm saying here, and to see whether the percentage there, when we minus that 50%, meaning it's lower than 37%, the overall achievement. And also to say on page 10, I think it's slide 19, when you talk about APPs of DTI vis-a-vis your program, the indicators there, when you say 25, in total you are saying 100, both you yourself and DTI are in 100. So where is the missing? Because if the department has planned 13, you have planned 25. What happened? What is it that you have done with that the numbering there? Because it's 100, the department there on quota, I think it's the APP was, business plan target was 18, yourself you planned 25, and you have, because you have fixed yourself with the department, the DTI, then what happened to the other, the minus that is not accounted for on that part? Because now you are in agreement with DTI, you have fixed your things, but what happened to that not achieved, and how did you manage with the department to get it 100 while yourself was 25, them was 18? I think I need that clarity on that part. And also on the financials, I don't know whether there's no CFO on this department on productivity exercise, the AG status, what is it that it's saying? Maybe on the next meeting we'll get a full information on what was raised by the AG, and all those concerns were taken care of, or how the strategy is going to be used on the concerns that was raised by the AG, because it's quiet. I think it's just numbers there. But it doesn't say the problem. What is it that the AG has found out? How are you performing? What is your
bargaining, your status, right? You have qualified and qualified, are you improving or you are not improving? I think it was good also to get that attachment on this one, because I think the compensation fund and the UIF, they have done justice on that part. They have updated us on the status on how are they performing. So I think those are the few things, Chair, I wanted to come.
Yeah, I think you can just come with a report on the financials with respect to the OCHA General and the action plans of dealing with those things next week. You bring an attachment next week to your briefing on your alternative funding things. And I think then you'll assist us if you do that. And Honorable Mutambi.
Thank you, Chair. I thought you were closing. I'm looking at the financial performance, slides 25 and 26 at page 13. Is in relation to quarter two. I really don't know what happened to the quarter one financial statements, or they say it was the status quo in quarter one, but for the sake of completeness, there should be also a quarter one a financial performance report. I don't locate it here on this presentation. Chair, my understanding, this entity is a Schedule 3A public entity. As the colleagues have said to say, then maybe the DG will have to explain this to us to say then. Why then this entity is not given the money? But also, when you look at the same financial statements, the actual budget there and the budget, the causes of the deficit as it's indicated here to say then. But the chairman, I think the way forward that they're going to come to propose to us the alternative ways of funding this institute. But there was supposed to be an allocation, because you see, like most of the programs here, they are just abandoned because there's no funding. And then it's ourselves who also approved their APP. I think there's an anomaly here. I think because the APP is informed by the budget that's available. So I don't know. Somebody must explain to us to say, how did we arrive here, maybe, under the circumstances, because the APP normally is informed by budgeting. Now you see then on the variance, almost everything is a deficit. It's what overspending, what I'm a bit confused on these things, because if it was a budget, then it was supposed to be made available for the entity to function, because now in essence we're just this entity we won't do away with it. Because it's a mass, we need to have this entity. I think it just needs proper resourcing. But also on the alternatives option, I think you'll be also proposing issues of partnerships. Maybe we'll deal with that when we come to that. But one is concerned like the other colleagues to say then I think it's as good as closing shops, because I believe you're only paying salaries now. But paying salaries forward under the circumstances. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I think, Chief, you have got some explanation on the last two slides. No, yes, 25 and 26. What do they represent? Because they've got almost same totals at the bottom, but the lines on the left, they seem to be different under expenditure, but they lead us to same totals. And what do they represent? Is it quarter one at the top, quarter two at the bottom, or is it quarter two and quarter two at the bottom, but with different angles of looking at your finances? And then, at the end of the day, also your slide nine, you just need some explanation as well. I've asked this from UIF, and they gave me a response that is a little bit questionable. I did not want to pursue it because I thought you can pursue it outside the meeting. Then number two on slide number nine. Provide support to programs aimed at sustainable employment and income growth. You then have two planned indicators. You then achieve one. One is not achieved. It is 50% agreed. Then when you go to quarter two, you still have two planned indicators. Then you achieve one and one is not achieved. Now my question is, the one that you achieved in quarter two, is it the one that you did not achieve in quarter one? Or what is the case? Because my interpretation is that the one that you did not achieve in quarter one, you still needed to proceed and complete it, especially if it is a prerequisite of what you are doing in quarter two. But then you achieved one in quarter two. So if you completed the one that you did not do in quarter one, that means in quarter two then you have got zero. You achieved nothing. And that is the explanation that I just want to know. If you remember with UIF, they said no, it's the same indicators. But I mean, if it's the same indicators, if you have completed it in quarter one, then you have got nothing in quarter two. Zero. You no longer have an indicator. But if you still have the same indicator again as an indicator in quarter two, then probably then you had more than one indicator in quarter one. So the manner in which you just draft our reports, then they must, sometimes they must make sense as well. You may proceed, Chief, if we are ready. You have full 10 minutes of responding.
Chair, let me start with slide 9 to answer your question in terms of number 2. That can be linked to slide 17. And 18. And I'll indicate as follows. If you look at slide 17, the two indicators in quarter one, the first one was achieved and the second was not achieved. But when you read that into slide 18, you will find the indicator 1, which was achieved in quarter 1, is not achieved in quarter 2. And what we did there was to reconcile the figures progressively, because when we realized that we're having funding challenges, and that we had already achieved that indicator in quarter one, we slowed down. But progressively we have achieved that indicator. So it's not the same indicator. In quarter one, it was indicator two that was not achieved. And then in quarter two, it was indicator one which was not achieved. Again, on the same slide, under number 5, the planned indicator was 1. That should reflect as a 0. I apologize for that.
Mm-hmm.
I apologize for that.
That correction.
Should reflect as a 0. Because if you look at slide, the answer lie in slide 16. There were 9 planned indicators and only 6 were achieved. So it's not 100%. Quarter 2, correct, Chair, I will provide information on the AG report, but we got a unqualified audit. We will also split, because what we did, we aggregated quarter one and quarter two in terms of funding. Then the budget will split that so that we're able to give the committee a clear indication of quarter one as well as quarter two, and then so that we can also link performance to funding. So I will provide that information, Chair.
You're done?
I'm done, Chair. I think the
details. Okay. Let's then try and assist you then on your slide 5. No, slide 9. Your slide 9, I'm just picking up that 2 again to assist you. You then say you have got the annual plant indicators is 2. Okay. 2. Then you have got 4 quarters. Then your quarterly target then will be 0.5. It can't be 2. Because when you add your quarterly target, they must equal your annual target. Okay. You may need to take it home, but that is what probably then you need to happen, because the manner in which you have put it in, you had annual plan targets 2, but then when you go to quarter 1, then you say your plan indicators again is 2. When you complete that, then it's finished. Then for the remaining 3 quarters, then you have got nothing. Okay, so just go and just apply your mind on it, and then you'll understand why it has led to some confusion. And then you will just look at on other quarters as well, whether you have actually matrixed them properly. Thanks, honorable members. I think we are done. We are preparing to get engagement with Productivity SA next week. And then we hope that the information that you require in relation to the Auditor General and their action plans, wherever there are shortcomings, then we will receive that next week. And then together with the briefing on their alternative funding plan, then we should be able to engage on that. What's happening? You expect the DG to say anything? Or is yourself? No, the DG would have responded long ago, unless if you want to remind him what you requested from him. Honorable Muteka? Yeah? No, I know that our time is coming to finish. Maybe he's applying for a job.
Proceed. Are you doing that on record?
No. Not on record.
Okay.
But there is nothing that stops you from doing that.
Okay. But, Chair, it's because I think there was a concern that I've asked DG to talk to, and also Honorable Mutambi did the same. Yeah. So that's why I was expecting him to say something on that.
Is the concern that whether we still need Productivity SA? Because that's what I heard you raising. I'm not. Otherwise, then you must just remind us so that he responds conclusively. Honorable Mutambi.
I think the DG understands our concern.
Okay. All right. If you understand, you proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Chair, yes, we do need the entity. It has a very important role to play in the economy of the country. The entity's mandate is derived from Section 31(1) of the Public Employment Services Act. It is clearly stated there what it's supposed to do is to promote employment, growth, and productivity. So the 26 million that we provide to the fund is to cater for that mandate. So just that mandate. From our side, from the allocation that comes from Fiscus, we transfer the money to the fund, to the entity on an agreed time. Now the entity, you remember that in 2008, during the credit crunch period, the entity entered into an agreement with the Unemployment Insurance Fund that given the fact that a number of companies were experiencing financial distress, so the entity would then come in and assist the companies to turn around. So for that, the UIF committed that it will fund the entity. So the second thing is, the DTI came on board to indicate that with the workplace challenge, they are prepared to fund the workplace challenge. Now, all over the period of years, the UIF has been funding the entity. The problem only started in 2016. Problem started in 2016. It started in 2016 when we uncovered a number of challenges with regards to how the entity was managed and how the UIF funds and how the training, the turnaround solution program was being managed. And there were investigations, so forensic investigations, and then the new CEO was appointed, this one, who sought to turn around the institution and address all the irregularities that were there. Now, the problems, persisted, because you remember that in terms of the agreement that the entity has signed with UI, there are responsibilities attached to entities, which is to report to the entity in terms of how the funds have been spent, to a lesser extent, that's where the problem has been, the accounting for the funds allocated to the entity for the turnaround solutions. Now, if you look at the performance of the entity, I mean, of the 13 planned indicators, only three are talking to the to test. And if the entity were to achieve that in quarter one, the entity would have its overall performance would have been sitting at 46%. And in quarter two, its overall performance would have been sitting at 75%. Just on those two indicators. Now, what it says to us is that those indicators are very important, because three as they may be, but the impact of those three indicators in the country, in the economy, is actually huge. And that's why we entered into a discussion we had with the CEO in terms of how the entity going forward should be funded. Because this mandate, the turnaround solution, is not fully funded by the department. And it's dependent on an agreement. So, which means that it's a temporary arrangement. And as and when the UIF decides, for whatever reasons, to pull out of,
this agreement, it means that this program is not going to be implemented. Yet, the Public Employment Services Act provides for the employment schemes and all that, which I think that this funding should be, the funding of this entity should be based on that provision in the Public Employment Services Act. And that's the discussion that we've had with the CEO, and we've agreed on terms of how this thing is going to be done. So as far as the future is concerned, we have spoken about what needs to be done, and I don't anticipate that this kind of problem will be experienced by the entity going forward.
Thank you, Chair.
Well, one thing that needs to be determined, DG, is what has happened to the interest that the UI had in Productivity SA. What has happened to that interest? Has it dissipated? And of course, is that one thing that we know is that UI has just indicated to us that that tendency that they had to Productivity SA, I think they have just reported on the training service providers that they're using the same tactic. But that tactic that they are using, it is counterproductive. Counter-revolutionary. You set yourself up to achieve certain things, you get people to assist you, but then you stop them from doing it by keeping the funding. I'm not talking about the irregularities and all these, or people failing to account and whatever, but at the end of the day, you defeat your own objective. And which means is that you know, it's a lot of thought must be put into these things, so that when you actually aim to deliver a particular service, all of us must fight to deliver those service, and we must do everything else, that anything that's supposed to support deliver of that, we must put our thought in doing that. And you don't see it like a school principal with a red pen and then sitting there and waiting to put a cross and say, not. No. There must be a developmental intervention rather than a punitive intervention. A developmental intervention is that when you pick up certain flaws that start existing, then you put up mechanism to correct them because they actually start threatening your objectives. So that's what one is just simply saying, is that If your eyes still have the interest it had in funding Productivity SA, and that interest has not disappeared, then it should come to its senses, because we're having a lot of funds in PIC or something like that, and people are stealing that money there, and it is not delivering anything to our people. And thanks for that explanation. I'm sure maybe we'll have a thorough engagement next week, and probably we'll have the rehash of the process in which this Productivity SA came to be, and the funding models, and then that was reached, and where it collapsed, and whatever, and then the new thinking. Then I think we'll engage that next week, and just come. You can spend some hours in Vision Active so that you come very strong next week. Because it may be a dirty, tricky meeting. Thank you very much, and for that, for this presentation, honourable members. Thanks as well for having reached this. We're not going to be able to go to our minutes and the program. We have just lost one member, and then the quorum has been collapsed. Then we'll just simply deal with those minutes next week. We'll possibly try and start with them. Then that brings us to the end of this meeting. Thank you very much. We'll meet next week.